So this year is called the Sharia Na, the Gates of Abuse. And it might be a little bit long, especially with questions, but I like questions, so I'm willing to it's worth the trade-off for me. I prepared this year with are some of the key ideas with the Fader clan and also Dani Kuznicki. So you know, but it's a has a few different parts, and just wanted to speak about one thing beforehand. Is the so today is the Isur Chag of Shavuos, and is an interesting shita the Ramban, who holds that different from the, it's Mechukas and Chazal. Rashi goes one way, Ramban goes another way, but he holds that the Kabbalah Satorah was really the day after Shavuos. Rashi learns like where they made the whole Karbanos and they had the Bris of the Torah. It was really the day before Matan Torah is like all like a process of a few different days leading up to it. And then Matan Torah was the pinnacle of the whole thing, was the, you know, the real, they were ready for the Kabbalah Satorah on Shavuos itself. But Ramban learns that Matan Torah was a Seres Adibros, and it was really only the next day that Moshe came back, and basically he didn't do the whole Karbanos and the Mizbeach and Bnei Yisrael doing Nasa Benishma until the next day. Ban says so they could have like patience and they could think about it and it could be done appropriately. And it was only the next day after Moshe Benu, and the Bris of Torah, according to Ramban, was really not just on the Seres Adibros, but really on Parshas Mishpatim. Right? So Yisra on Mishpatim. And that was really all done the day after Shavuos and Nasa Benishma and the whole Bris Torah, the Kabbalah of Torah, according to Ramban, is really the day after Shavuos. So, you know, that's why it's in Yanin Yoma today. The day of really Kabbalah Satorah, according to Ramban, which is the next day. And we'll be doing a lot from Parshas Mishpatim. That'll be towards the second half of this year. Okay. Most of what we're going to be doing here is going to be, in the beginning at least, is going to be the Gemara and Bava Metzia. It starts in Chesam and Beis, and it goes through like Nintesim and Beis. So a few Gemaras I'll do inside, and then the famous story of the Tana Shel Achnai with Rabbi Eliezer and the Chamim, I'll kind of do that outside a little bit. But I basically want to get the facts, and then we'll try to give us far to understand how Rashi learns these Gemaras. Okay, so the Mishnah is in Chesam Beis. It says, Keshem she'ona b'mekach u'memkar, kach ona b'dvar. So just like there is monetary abuse, you can abuse somebody financially when you transact with them, buying and selling. The standard halacha case is where you rip them off. You know they have something that's valuable and you pay them much less than it's worth, or you, the opposite, you know, you charge somebody much more than the thing costs and they're ignorant of the fact, you know, somebody's coming from out of town, a foreigner, they don't really know, you know, how much something costs and, you know, you double the price on them. So that'd be like monetary abuse. But there's also Allah Havanaz Dvarim, verbal abuse. Okay, so the Mishnah has a few cases. It's one case, is you know, hard case. This is a part I'm not going to go into. We're going to go into the philosophical side of the sugya. But you know, you don't want to buy an object and you pretend you do in order to, you know, different problems that could be. Ima yibal tshuva, if a person is you know, he's a bal tshuva, lo yomer lo zechor maaseh rishonim. You shouldn't mention to him, or, you know, remember what you used to do? You know, it's embarrassing for the person and you're doing it in front of his friends. Remember when you were before you did tshuva, what kind of things you used to do? Things like that. Makes him feel bad. Same thing. If he's a son of Gerim, don't remind him, certainly to himself, to his face and in front of, especially in public. Remember what your father used to do, things like that. Shemar v'ger lo sonav lo sechatzenu. That's the Mishnah. Because, and by ger, there's a separate iser of anaz dvarim and anaz mamam. The Torah repeated the iser of verbal abuse and monetary abuse, for a ger. That we'll talk about much later in this year. But the basic idea, okay, and then, you know, there's other cases, the Bryson and the Gemara, which we're not gonna do, has the case of, the ger himself. You say, look at what you used to do. You ate trefos or nevelos. Now you want to learn Torah. And the Rambam has a case of a person like in a shir, you know, let's say, you know, somebody in the shir, asks a question and you turn to somebody else and say, hey, you know the answer for that. You know, he doesn't know. But you're basically embarrassing him by making it, you know, calling on him in a sense, in a way where you know he doesn't know. in order to really embarrass him. Okay, so that's basically, you know, and there's a lot of types of verbal abuse. And I'm going to go basically with the chinuch. The Sefer Chinuch has a good definition for it. It's mitzvah shin lamed ches. And he defines it as shelo nomar li Yisrael dvarim shiachi ruhu v'yitzai ruhu v'ein ba koach li azar meham. So you shouldn't say to a Jew, only pause between two Jews, things that will cause him suffering or pain, and he's helpless against them. He's helpless to defend himself against them. That is onosvar. And I think it's it's something that the Gemara is very sensitive to. There's a lot of different issues that happen with it, and different ways it can occur. It's something that's fairly common, and you know, the Gemara goes into the details. But just to get a good general idea, it's essentially verbal abuse. You know, telling somebody something, making them feel bad. The worst case is doing it publicly embarrassing them. A big part of the sugya here is devoted to that. Again, we're not going to go into that. But that's the general idea of onas dvarim. Okay, as opposed to in mekach hamemkar, where you financially abuse the person. The Gemara says that Amar Rabbi Yochem Shem Bar Yochai, Gadol Nas Dvarim Enas Mamo. So Nas Dvarim is really worse. Okay, and Nas Dvarim is worse than Onas Mamo, the monetary abuse. Because, and regardless of a few reasons, see, by Onas Dvarim, it says, V'yereisim Elokecha. Right, so the pasuk is, Lo Son Isha Esam Yiso. Right? So it says V'yereisim Elokecha, Yishafir Hashem. So Rashi explains, and then the Gemara says, because davram maso leiv. Now, nos dvarim, when you attack somebody, you verbally abuse them, it's very often you have the ability to deny it and hide it and pretend that it's not, that you didn't do it on purpose, you didn't intentionally. I didn't realize he would be offended. I thought it didn't bother him. It's the kind of thing that very easily a person can defend himself and to others and to himself and pretend that, you know, he wasn't really intending to do that. And therefore, it's very similar. Ultimately, God knows what you're thinking, what your intentions were, and the effect it had. And therefore, as opposed to not as mamon, it's like clear, you're ripping somebody off. Okay. The other reason is zebe begufo zebe mono. There's a, when you, to abuse somebody financially, you're attacking his money, but onas dvarim is his body, his person. You're attacking his person. Not his, not his body, but his person. It's not physical abuse, but it's verbal abuse, it's psychologically, emotionally. You're torturing the guy. And by onas mamon, you could return the money. Tzitein l'shavon, onas dvarim, you can't just, there's nothing you can easily do. It's very hard to repair that. And, okay. Then, so far so good, and I hope that's the, clear, the idea of onas dvarim, the iser. Then on the Testament Aleph, I'm going to skip the part, I guess, of embarrassing a person publicly. The Gemara comes back to onas dvarim, and it says like this. Amar Rav, on the Testament Aleph, like a third of the way down. Olam ye adam zayir bonas ishto, shemitok shedim asa mitzuya onas akropa. So a person should always be careful about Rashi's onas ishto, bonas dvarim letzara, by verbally abusing her to cause her pain, because she cries very easily, and because of that, her ona is krova, is closer. So Rashi says onasa krova lavo, her ona is lavo per anios onasa mimar lavo. So it's krova lavo. I mean, it doesn't mean close, that she's. It does mean that she'll easily cry, and you have to be more, you know, careful about verbal comments, or, you know, what could be construed as abuse. The more sensitive a person is, the more likely they'll take offense. And the paranos, the punishment for the ona, comes faster. Why? Amar Rabbi Elazar, v'yom shenechar beis hamikdash, from the day the beis hamikdash was destroyed, nin alu shari tefila, the gates of tefila, of prayer, have been closed. Shenemar kam ki ezag v'ashavei asasam tefilasi. Okay, so pasuk neicha that Yirmiyah is saying when he cries out to Hashem, his tefillah has been, right, it's closed off. So from the day the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, the gates of prayer have been closed. So even though the gates of tefillah have been shut down, have been closed, the gates of tears have not been closed. Shenamar. So the Gemara quotes a pasuk from Tehillim. Okay. The pasuk for Shar Dema'os, important to keep in mind that the gates of tears are not closed. It's from Tehillim. It says, Shema Tfilasi Hashem Beshafasi Hazina. So hear my, you know, it's a request. Hear my Tfilah Hashem and my cries you'll give ear to. Al Demasi Al Tacharash. But to my tears you will not be silent. I think Gemara is being Darisha. Is that it's a request that he's asking Hashem to hear his Tfilah. But he's botech, he's confident that to his tears, Hashem is not going to be deaf to his tears. Okay, so that's the idea of Rabbi Lazar and Rav, right, that you have to be, even though the gates of tefillah have been closed, the gates of tears, or the gates of tefillah have been closed since the destruction of Beis HaMikdash, but the gates of tears have not been closed. Okay. Then the Gemara goes into, you know, when you should listen to wife, when you shouldn't. We'll skip that. Then the Gemara is like this. Amar Rav Chisda. Okay, so Amar Rav Chisda. Kol ha-sharim ninalu, chutz mi-shari ona. So all the gates, Rashi is sharim shel tefillah. So all the gates of tefillah have been closed, except for the gates of abuse, shari ona. Okay, which means, Rashi says, hatzoik ala naz dvarim, ein ha-shar ninalu b'fanav. So the shar, the gate of somebody who cries out to Hashem for, based on when they're victims of verbal abuse. So that has not been closed. Okay. And Shenemar, Hashem, Vinei Hashem, Nitzav Achomas Anach, Ubayad Anach, Spazik and Amos. So it's, I guess, Anach literally means like some sort of level, but the Gemara's Dorish is referring to Anach. And that's showing you that that's the it's very hard to figure out exactly, that Chrom tried to figure out what exactly is the limud. We're not going to get into it, not exactly obvious, but it's being dorish of the word, anach, that has to do with, that the shar onah is still open. Okay. An obvious problem presents itself of the Gemara had said earlier, Rav, right, mentioned that Rabbi Elazar, presumably the Tana, it's hard to know exactly who that was, had said, if in the Beit Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, the gates of tefillah have been closed. But except for the gates of tears have not been closed. And it quotes a pasuk in Tehillim. And now Rav Chisda, who's after Rav, a generation or two after Rav, so he says that all the gates of tefillah have been closed except for the Shar Onah, and it's a pasuk in Amos. So I mean, basic question is, are they arguing with each other? Are they contradicting? And presumably Rav Chisda is speaking about from the day the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, because why would, right, if the, I can't really imagine he's speaking about during the Zman Beis HaMikdash, because why would the gates of tefillah be closed? So, right, I mean, what is it, which gates are open, the gates of tears or the gates of onah? Okay, but that's a basic question, and we'll see later on in the sukkah how Rashi is going to try to handle that in a surprising way. Okay. So far, so good. I hope that question's clear. Super clear.
Rabbi Zimmer.
Yes.
Can you just restate the question one more time, please?
The question is like this. The question is that the first memra, the first statement, was by Rav, quoting Rebbe Lazar, is that from the day the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, all the gates of tefillah have been shut except for the gates of tears. And now, Rav Chisda is coming with a different statement, all the gates of tefillah have been shut down except for the gates of abuse, of shari onah. So it seems like a contradiction, which gates open, right? I mean, he could have said, all the gates of tefillah have been closed except for the gates of tears and the gates of onah. Right, but it sounds like each one's saying, no, all the other gates are closed except for this one. You know, so what's, you know, just how do you, This is not a problem that I'm going to, Rosh is going to deal with this problem later on. I'm just pointing out a problem, the Zugya, that, you know, might not be, you know, the problem the Zugya that Rosh is going to deal with is which gates are still open, the gates of tears or the gates of abuse?
Shari, do they all agree on the same number of gates?
I don't know. Who knows? You know, where do they get these gates from exactly? You know, it's not exactly obvious what these gates are. Where are these gates? So yeah, I mean, look, if one's open, then, you know, which one's open, right? Okay.
Isn't it only a question if they all agree that these three gates exist? Maybe the gate of Onah is the same gate as the gate of tears.
Oh, very good, Leslie. You're mechavin to Rashi's pshat.
No, I don't know.
Very good. No, very good. I mean, Tosos holds it two separate ones, but we see Rashi holds it the same. Okay. It'll come in later, but yeah, excellent. That's one way to resolve it, and that's what Rashi's going to do, and we're going to try to explain that. Right? Why does it have two different names? Right? Why is Rebbe Elazar calling it one thing, and why is Rav Chisda calling it something else? It's the same game. But that's Rashi's pshat, to learn as one. It's in the end of the Sugya. The very end of this whole Gemara, we'll see that Rashi. Okay, so yeah, I mean, like, it's not, you know, there's ways to resolve these problems, but that's good. Okay, you jumped the gun, but very good. Okay, fine. Then the Gemara continues. It says like this. Amar Rebbe Elazar, HaKol Nifra Bidei Shliach Chutz Mi'Anah, Shnemar B'Yado Anah. So Rashi says, HaKol Aidei Shliach, Nifraim HaKol Averos Aidei Shliach, all Averos that a person does. Hashem punishes the person through a shliach, through some sort of intermediary force. But except for Onah, right? Onah's dvarim is ubiyado lo masul shliach. He doesn't give it over to shliach. He does it himself. Okay, Onah's dvarim is something that's different from every other avera. Hashem punishes Onah's dvarim biyado, not al yedei shliach. And then Amar Bavahu, Gimel in a Pirgud Nina Bifneim. There's three Averos where the Pirgud, the curtain, is not closed in front of them. Ona, the Gezel of Avodazara. So again, Ona's Dvarim, verbal abuse, and Gezel and Avodazara. And Rashi says, what does it mean, the Pirgud? So Pirgud is Mechita Shebein Ashchina Letzavamoro. So that's the curtain between HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the Shechina, and the angels. So what does it mean that it's not the Ein Ninah? It's lahafzik riyasa min hamakom el talmud rod osanai ad shiyifra. So God, God's always views them. There's no hafzik. There's nothing to prevent God from seeing it. He always sees it until he pays it back, until he punishes them. Okay, so the punishment of Onah is singular insofar as it's biado. It's not done. It's done by Kadosh Baruch Hu. It's not done through a shliach. And it's grouped together with Gezel and Avodah Zarah as three things that are always in front of Hashem. He sees them constantly until he punishes it. Okay, good. Those are the main Gemaras. I want to do the story now, but those are the main Gemaras on Nasvar. And the Gemara goes into the story of the Tana Shel Achnai. Okay. So the Tana Shel Achnai is a very tragic story, and it's a very important story in the Masorah. And it started with an earthenware oven that was made up of pieces, and it was connected with and when it was connected, the pieces were put together. A person put sand in between them. Okay, if there's no sand, everybody agrees it's a kli, it's a vessel, and it's a makabel toma. But when there's sand in between the parts, there's a machlokes between Rabbi Elazar and the Chachamim about whether it's makabel toma or not. Okay, is that considered a kli? I guess it's made to be taken apart. It has sand in between. It's not. It doesn't stick together the same way. So Rabbi Elazar just said that's not a kli, it's tahor, it's not makabel toma. You can, even if it touched the mace, then you could still use it to cook trumos and kachim. And the Chum say, no, metamin, it's no good. So big machlokas, and the debate went on for a while, and they tried to convince him, and he tried to convince them. And they brought many, many proofs, and he had many, many answers, and they were not able to convince each other what to do. So eventually, Rabbi Eliezer, is Rabbi Eliezer ben Horkanus, Right? Rabbi Elazar is a Talmud of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, probably. And eventually he said to them, he said, if I'm right, let this tree, this charav, boxer tree, let it fly away. Let it be uprooted. And the tree got uprooted, flew hundreds of feet away. Pretty good, impressive. And they said to him, that's not a great raya. You know what I mean? If you had a Rambam or Gemara Tosa, something, fine, you can prove something. But trees flying away, that's not how you bring a raya. He said, okay, fine. This stream, this canal, if I'm right, let it prove it. And the stream started flowing backwards. And they said, that's, again, not quite the rayas we're looking for, Abelias. Not to be outdone. He says, if I'm right, let the walls of the Beis Medrash prove it. So the walls of the Beis Medrash started collapsing in on them. Scary situation. Rabbi Yeshua and Rabbi Elazar, again, where the Rambam says, and the Moram says that Rabbi Yeshua and Rabbi Elazar, whenever it says Chachmei Sostam, it's always Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Yeshua. Okay. So Rabbi Yeshua was obviously on the other side, the Chachamim, who held the argument with Rabbi Elazar. And he said to the walls, he said, what are you getting involved? Walls of the Beis Medrash, what are you involved in our machlokas? If Talmid Chacham are fighting about an issue, you know, what are you sticking your heads to the Beis Medrash getting involved in this in our machlokas? So the walls stopped. They didn't collapse fully on the because of the covet of Rabbi Yeshua. On the other hand, they didn't go back to the way they were because of the covet of Rabbi Eliezer. And to the day when this Gemara was recorded, apparently you could see those walls. Okay, good. Then Rabbi Eliezer wasn't done. He said, if I'm correct, let the Shemayim, let it be proven to me from the heavens. And a Baskel came out, and the Baskel said, what are you bothering Rabbi Eliezer for? The halacha is like him always. It's always like him. He's Rabbi Eliezer Gadol. He's a unique mind, right? He's never forgot anything. He learned from his Rebbeim, and he was a unique mind, and the halacha is always like him. He's always correct. So Rabbi Yeshua got up, and he says, Lo bashamayimi. Lo bashamayimi. What does it mean, Lo bashamayimi? So Rabbi Yirmiyahu explains, he says, Kfar netna nasna Torah mehar Sinai. The Torah is already given har Sinai. Eina mashkichim baskel, shekfar kasva bahar Sinai, betorah, acharam lahatos. So it doesn't make a difference. Because we already have halacha. That when the Sanhedrin argues, you go by Rov. And I don't care if the Baskel supports Rabbi Eliezer and says halacha is like him. Ultimately, we have Rov. And that's the method. It's no longer up to Shemayim. The Shemayim doesn't determine the halacha. It's given to the Chachmei Yisrael. And the principle is go by Rov. Okay. Rabbi Eliezer did not back down because he knew he was right. And he had a lot of confirmation that he was right. And he would not accede to their psak, to their rov, and he maintained his position, even, they maintained their position, even with all his, the miracles being done. And, he maintained his position. So, Oso Ayam, a vehicle Tahar Shatira Eliezer. They brought all those Taharos, the Trumos, Kachin, that he was Matar, that he said it's fine. Visar from Beish, and they burnt it in fire, they burnt it. Rashi has one word there. He says, Vivim Visar from the front of, they burnt it in front of him. And they got together, made a discussion, and they decided to excommunicate him, right? To put him in Nidoy, Cheir Nidoy. And they basically kicked him out of the Beis Medrash. You know, they wouldn't let him back. You know, halachas a Nidoy. They learn for a person, do business. There's a lot of basically being kicked out of the society of the Chachamim because of his refusal to accept Acher Rav Mahatos. Okay? What exactly the machlokas was, that's this part I don't want to go into so much. I want to do it because of the Nazvarim, as you see the story goes on. But it would seem to me that it's, this is right, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai reestablished, Sanhedrin and Yavna from Yushalayim. And this is right after these are Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai's Talmidim. It seems it could be that, Rabbi Elazar didn't hold that, once Sanhedrin has been kicked out of the Lishka Sagazas and the Parsha Zakin Mamre doesn't really apply, without the, the Kamtza of Elisa Lamakom, it may be held that Rove is no longer binding in the same way. Like it is Bismanazah, like Rove doesn't have the same determinants, that it used to be when the Sanhedrin was in Lishka Sagazas. And they held maybe there's no Zakin Mamre. You don't kill a person who argues, but there's still a Lach of Rove and there's Torah Achas is one Torah and you don't, and you have to go by Rov in Sanhedrin, right? It's before Stima Sejas. So, but they thought that it was his refusal to accept the institution of Rov in Sanhedrin, in Yavne, that was dangerous to the Masorah. So dangerous that this is the Gadol Ador, Rabbi Eliezer, you know, one of the Gadol Ador, where they put him in Nidoy, put him in Nidoy. Okay. So they said, who's going to go and let him know? Who's going to tell him? So Rabbi Akiva said, Akiva was a student of Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua, the younger generation. He said, I'll go, because I'm afraid that the whole world is going to be destroyed if somebody else goes. So Rabbi Akiva went. He wore black clothes and a black talis, and he sat Dalet Amos, more than Dalet Amos from Rabbi Eliezer. And he went to Rabbi Eliezer's house, I guess, in Lod, to go learn from him. So Rabbi Eliezer says to him, Akiva, says, what's going on here? Why are you wearing black? Why are you sitting near me to learn? So Rabbi Akiva said to him, he says, Rabbi, seems to me that your friends have separated from you. And Rabbi Eliezer, of course, realized what that meant. Rabbi Eliezer tore his clothes. He took off his shoes and he sat down on the ground, and his eyes filled with tears. At that moment, the Gemara records that the economic situation in the world took a devastating turn for the worse. A third of the olive harvest, a third of the barley harvest, and the wheat harvest was destroyed. Okay, even could be people's, the does were destroyed that people were working with. Wherever Rabbi Eliezer looked on that day, it was devastation, very bad, you know. But presumably Rabbi Akiva, because of the way he did it, he prevented it from being the entire world being destroyed, but it was still a third of the world. Okay. And even Rabbi Gamliel was the Nasi. So Rabbi Gamliel was the Nasi from Hillel, who's direct descendant of Hillel Zaken. Rabbi Gamliel was the one who orchestrated the whole thing. Okay. Rashi says, Nasi Hayaval Piv Yas Nasi. The whole thing was done by him. So, he was the one running it. And, he was traveling in a boat. He used to go back and forth between, the Romans and Eretz Yisrael. He was a main political, representative of Bnei Yisrael and of Klal Yisrael at that time. So he was traveling in a boat, and a storm came that threatened to destroy the boat. And he said, so he got up and he said, it seems to me that I'm being punished here. My boat, to destroy my boat, to kill me basically, because of Rabbi Eliezer ben Horkanus. So he stood up, Ribbono shel Olam, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, gala v'yadu lefanecha, shelo lechvod yasisi, v'lo lechvod beis Abba asisi, el lechvodcha, shelo yir machlokes b'Yisrael. So you know, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I didn't do this for my own honor, because Rabbi Eliezer wasn't respecting the authority of the Sanhedrin, which Rabbi Gamliel was the leader of, the president of the Beis Din. And I didn't do it because of the institution of the Nasius, right, the power and the authority of the Beis Nasi. But I did it for your honor, that you shouldn't be machlokas in Yisrael, right? That's the whole parsha zakin mamre. You don't have shtei toros. It's to keep maintain one authority, or one system of Torah. And that's why I did it. So nachayam izafa. So the storm did not destroy Rabbi Gamliel. Hakadosh Baruch Hu accepted Rabbi Gamliel's taina that he did it l'shem shemayim, and Rabbi Gamliel was spared. Okay. From that day forward, so Rabbi Eliezer was married to Rabbi Gamliel's sister. Okay, Rabbi Eliezer's sister, her name was Ema Shalom. So Ema Shalom was the wife of Rabbi Eliezer and the sister of Rabbi Gamliel. From that day forward, she would never let Rabbi Eliezer say tachnan, let me fall ape, to fall on his face and to say tachnan. One day after that, subsequent day, I don't know, a couple months later, who knows, she made a mistake. She thought it was Rosh Chodesh, it wasn't Rosh Chodesh, or some saying Ani came to the door and she got distracted. And Rabbi Eliezer said tachnan. He said tachnan. When she came into his room and she saw that he was saying tachnan, she was too late, she didn't stop him. She said, you've killed my brother. You've killed Rabbi Gamliel. And that moment, a sound came out from the base of Nasi that the Nasi had died. The Nasi had died, that Rabbi Gamliel had died right after Rabbi Eliezer had said Tachman. For the first time in months. So Rabbi Eliezer said to her, how did you know that Rabbi Gamliel had died? So she said, Amrlei kach mikublanim mi base avi abba, kol asharam ninalu chutz misharyonah. I have a Mesorah from my father's father's house that all the gates are closed except for the gates of abuse, the Shari Ona. Okay. That's the end of the Gemara. Now, what does it mean? She has said she has a Mesorah. She, remember, she's Rabbi Gamliel's sister. Okay. So Rashi said, Mibes Avi Abba. So who's the Mesorah from? Rashi says, Mibes David Avi Mishpacha, the head of the family is David HaMelech, or the Nasi, the Hillel is a direct descendant of David. And the Nisim, right, Rabbi Gamliel, and Rabbi Gamliel's, Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, all those things, Rabbi Yehuda and Nasi, they're all descendants of David. Right, the Nisias, L'yasa Shem Yehuda, that's the power and the authority was the Nasi had the, really the, was the political authority of Klal Yisrael. So, Shabbat Nisim Ha'isa, Vehim Beis David. Okay, so what does it mean? So that's, so her Mesorah is from David HaMelech. And she has a Mesorah that all the gates are closed except for the Shari Ona. Okay. So Rashi says, Lefi Shetzar HaLevi V'Karav L'Har Demos. Because when the person is verbally abused, they suffer, their hearts suffer. They emotionally, it's very painful. And it's very close for them to cry. V'Karav L'Har Demos. Okay. Why is Rashi doing that? So Rashi's trying to do, like Leslie was saying before, is that the David HaMelech, the Pasuk in Tehillim, from David HaMelech, was the memra about the Shari Demos, the gates of fears. But the Gemara here is saying that she has a Mesorah, that all the gates of Tefillah are closed, except for the gates of Ona, the Shari Ona. So how do you, what's going on here? It's she's quoting the wrong with the Pasuk. She should have said, except for the Shari Demos, if she wanted to quote David HaMelech. So Rashi's learning that really the Shari Demos and the Shari Ona are really one and the same. And her Mesorah really goes back to David HaMelech. And how do you, why is it calling it Shari Ona if it means Shari Demos? Well, because when a person is verbally abused, it's very emotionally painful. And a person very easily can cry. And therefore, the Shari Ona and Shari Demos are basically the same thing. Okay. Tosfos. Hey, yes, go ahead.
In David's time, the basement wasn't destroyed yet. So why would all the Shari Tefillah be closed?
Yeah, that's a good question. I guess it just means that the limud is because he has confidence that he's like requesting that Hashem hears tefillah, but he's confident that his tears are not going to be ignored. So you see like there's a different level of confidence that David HaMelech had in terms of the Shari, in terms of demos when a person cries, than he does have for regular tefillah. Regular tefillah he's not sure about. But when a person cries, he's absolutely confident. And the Gemara holds, I guess, that that's a significant difference in terms of a person's certainty about whether their tefillah is going to be answered. The fact that Shari Demos, David was absolutely confident, that doesn't change when the Beis HaMikdash is destroyed. The Shari Tefillah is changed because that could happen, that could not happen. But the gates of tears or the Shari Ona, according to Rashi, since that's not like contingent, it's guaranteed that Hashem will answer you. That's not going to be dependent upon the Zman Beis HaMikdash.
Okay.
I guess. Okay. Okay, good. Now Tosa says, quotes Rashi. He says, Mash Mishum Denafka Le'el Mikra De Tehillim, De Shari Dema Lo Ninalu. So I mean, why is Rashi doing this? Why is Rashi calling the Shari? Why is he saying that her Mesorah was from David HaMelech? Must be Rashi's trying to do this because he realizes it's from David HaMelech and he's trying to say, how could the Shari Ona be from Mesorah from David HaMelech? Shari Ona is learned from Pasuk in Amos and the Shari Demos is learned from David HaMelech. So that's why Rashi combines them, says it's one. He's Bechinam Dachakein, right? It's for nothing. Because you could just say that that really it's referring to Rav Chista's memra, that that's Biyad HaAnach, and it's referring to the Shari Ona itself. And I, where's her Mesorah from? Her Mesorah is from Rabbi Gamliel, or Gamliel's her brother. Rabbi Gamliel's grandfather was also Rabbi Gamliel, right? And Rabbi Gamliel's, Rabbi Gamliel's Zaken's grandfather was Hillel. So, I mean, there's an illustrious bias, illustrious Mesorah, and it doesn't mean David HaMelech. It means her Mesorah was from, you know, Rabbi Gamliel's Zaken. Okay, that's a Tosa lens. We're not going to focus too much on Tosas, but he says they're two different Sharim. What's the Gemara clearly is two different Sukkim, two different Memras. How Tosas resolves that question, I don't know. But we're going to focus on Rashi. Okay, that is basically, okay, the question I want to ask is, what's this back and forth between, with Rabbi Gamliel? It sounds like initially Akash Baruch Hu wanted to punish Rabbi Gamliel and it was going to kill him. His boat was at sea, and there was going to be a storm that was going to destroy it. And Rav Gamliel has this taina of I did l'shem shemayim, everything I did l'shem shemayim to save the Torah from becoming fractured in two systems. Rav Eliezer was a danger to the Misora. Right? And of course, Rav Gamliel wouldn't have done that if it wasn't l'shem shemayim. And Akash Baruch accepted the taina. But now, all of a sudden, Rabbi Eliezer says Tachlan, and Rabbi Gamliel dies. What happened to the taina? What happened to the fact that it was l'shem shemayim? What changed? What changed? Right. Also, be nice to understand why Tachlan itself. Okay, that's the main problem, and that's the end of the sugya. That's basically the sugya of Anas Dvarim. Basically, ends with that. Okay, gets into a little bit of the Ger, the two different lines by the Ger. Maybe we'll take that up later. But that's more or less the Gemara I want to take up. Before I go to the answer to Rashi, is there anybody have any questions on what we just did, the definition of Anas Dvarim, the different memras of the Shari Demal, Shari Ona, and the story of the Tana Shachnai, Rabbi Eliezer, and Rabbi Gamliel?
Yeah, just for clarification, what Ona did Rabbi Eliezer receive?
So it's Anas Dvarim. I mean, that's the sugya. Clearly, the Gemara is saying it's Anas Dvarim. And I guess I think that's why Rashi adds the thing. The best I can understand is it was by Rashi as Sarfan Osalafanov. Is like the Gemara seems to hold, at least the way Rashi interprets it, is that it didn't have to, they didn't have to take out all the Truma and Kachan that he had said was Tahor and burn it in front of him. Like maybe that was a little bit excessive. Wait for him not to be there. You know, it seems like the way that Rabbi Gamliel did it, they did it in a very harsh way that perhaps was not absolutely necessary. Now, Rabbi Gamliel is acting the Shem Shemayim, and when you're trying to knock a guy out and really preserve the Mesorah, you have to attack somebody. And in general, you don't want to attack somebody and tear them down and destroy them. It's not a good thing to do. But sometimes a person's a threat to the Mesorah. It's going to really change the whole direction of the Mesorah and prevent it from being preserved. This is what they were involved in. The Beis Medrash and Yavne was really after the Chorban. The whole essence was to preserve the Mesorah. And Rabbi Eliezer was the danger to that. So Rabbi Gamliel was forced to get involved in really publicly showing that this guy is no longer part of the Mesorah and you can't, you know. So once a person gets involved in actions, you can go too far. You're best off in general avoiding these types of political conflicts and things like that, having to really destroy somebody. It's something you don't want to engage in. But he was forced to. Perhaps the Gemara held that he went too far. He didn't have to burn it in front of him, in his face, or whatever it was. But the Gemara seems to be holding that Rabbi Eliezer was a victim of Anas Dvarim on some level. Maybe it was L'shem Shemayim, but nevertheless, he was a victim of the attacks of the Chachamim, isolating him, and really, you know, they kicked him out of the Beis Medrash, isolated. It's the God of the door. He's cut off from his life source. So he was a victim of this, of Onas Dvarim.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Gemara doesn't give too much more. I don't know. Maybe there's something else occurred. I think Gemara doesn't record.
Okay.
Okay. Any other questions? Okay. So, all right. I'd like to explain Rashi. Okay, what is Rashi doing? So I think basically you have to first start by realizing there's two different things going on in this sugya. Okay, and separate out the different members of the Gemara. The different
Rabbi Zimmer?
Yes, go ahead.
I'm sorry to interrupt you. Just a quick question. It seems funny to me that Rabbi Eliezer's wife never, I guess, discussed with him that if he says Tachnun, he's going to kill Rabbi Gamliel. Does he want to do that? It just seems like a strange, thing not to have like worked out ahead of time and to just kind of leave it up to, she's going to constantly try and interrupt him.
Right. Yeah. I mean, that was her plan. It's not clear why it had to be Tachnun. It's not clear why interrupting it, you know, interrupting it, and why you can have a discussion. You know, I don't know the relationship, but apparently she didn't think that she'd be able to convince him not to when he said Tachnun. I mean, you know, I don't know if Rabbi Elazar said as God to kill Rabbi Gamliel, as much as, you know, he was suffering and he, you know, his dimasa was krova and he was, you know, crying, and it was a awful experience, awful thing. And this went to the end of his life. Chazal never mattered to remove the nidoy from Rabbi Eliezer until after he died. Once he died, they, you know, but they basically prevail. Halacha was never like him. Anything he ever argued with anybody, Halacha was never like him in his lifetime. And it was very hard for him. And maybe she didn't feel that she could convince him not to say Tachnun, you know. And I don't know if the Gemara is learning that he specifically requested that Rabbi Gamliel should die, as much as he suffered. And when he said Tachnun, that's when Rabbi Gamliel died. But, you know, I guess it depends on the relationship or would he have listened. This was her best plan.
Okay, then.
Okay. So, okay. There, I guess that there's two different ideas and these different members in this Gemara. I think the first one is there's a specific hashkacha to punish abusers, people who abuse victims through verbal abuse, donas dvarim. And that's the idea of midas adin. There's an idea of midas adin of onesh, and Hashem punishes people who engage in onas dvarim and victimize others in a different way than other averos. And that's, for example, the Gemara that that all other averos Hashem punishes through a shliach, a malach, but this one Hashem does himself. Or the pirga, the curtain is closed in front of all their veros except for three: anas dvarim, avodazar, and gezel. That it's halacha. It's halacha in midas adin in onesh. That there's a different hashkacha in terms of punishing abusers, verbal abusers, emotional, psychological people, you know, who torture others. There's a different hashkacha of midas adin to punish them. That's one element that these gemaras mention. The other one is a midas harachamim, that when a person cries out and he's so ache based when they're the victim of verbal abuse, so then let's start with the shad the most. A person who has who's crying to Hashem and they engage in tefillah through tzaakah, that's a different type of a tefillah, then they're always answered, even though Yom Shachar Beis HaMikdash, all the gates of Tefillah have been closed. Okay. But the gates of the Shaar Demos is open. We'll start at the Shaar Demos. Okay. Now, what does it mean, the gates of Tefillah? So that's really from Yaakov Inum Vayetze. Rashi says when Yaakov woke up from his dream with the ladder, he says, Manora Makom Azain Zakim Beis Elokim Vizesh Shaar Shemayim. And Rashi was referring to the Makom HaMikdash. The Makom HaMikdash is Shaar Shemayim. Rashi says, "Lalos misham tfilos l'shamayim." So that the bizman habeis hamikdash, when there was a time of beis hamikdash, I think it seems to me that it's not just the physical beis hamikdash, but it means also the hashra shechina in the mikdash. And I can't prove it, but it's possible that the Gemara really means from the day that the first beis hamikdash was destroyed, because really you didn't have hashra shechina in the same way during the second beis hamikdash. But it could be the beis hamikdash itself. But when there's hashra shechina in the mikdash, that creates a different reality to a person's mind about God's existence and the ability to approach God and to speak to Him and to daven and to set your requests before Him. And once the mikdash is destroyed, that pathway, that gateway to tefillah and to encountering Kadosh Baruch Hu is closed off. Okay. To, you know, you might say that there's no longer a pigia, an encounter between the individual and a Kadosh Baruch Hu once the mikdash is destroyed through the normal avenues of tefillah. You don't really encounter Kadosh Baruch Hu in Tefillah anymore without the vehicle of the Mikdash institution, the idea of Hashra'a Shechina. And to a degree, it would seem that the further and the longer we get from the base of Mikdash, the more difficult it becomes to encounter Kadosh Baruch Hu in Tefillah. And the you know, we still do Nochach HaMikdash, but, you know, so to speak, we're outside the gates. The gates are locked and we're davening from outside the gates. We don't really have that vehicle of producing a mental state that's conducive to encountering a Kadosh Baruch Hu and being misvalo without the base of Mikdash anymore. All right, that's the Shaar Shemayim, the base of Mikdash. Once it's destroyed, things have changed. But the Shaar Dema'os, when a person cries, that's not regular tefillah. It's tachnunim. It's a different type of a tefillah. It's a'aka, za'aka. It's a different form of tefillah. And that form, that tefillah doesn't really occur in Shemon Esrei. That tefillah really occurs, in tachnunim. Okay. Or slichos, which you say after tefillah. And we say tefillah is raised like slichos and atainus or tachnunim. It's a different type of a tefillah. It's a different shame, or on a tainus, right, an esara. So that's a different type of a tefillah, and it has different rules, a different gateway. And when a person is, and is demalos, when a person is reduced to tears, and there's a breakdown of the personality of the facade that provides a barrier in this world, after basically Mikdash is destroyed, between us and Akash Baruch Hu, during when a person is really reduced to tears, for whatever the situation might be. Could be because, you know, they lost their financial position, or they're scared, and somebody dependent upon is, it happened on that is not there, or whatever the situation is, and there are persons reduced to tears. It could be from abuse, it could be from many other reasons. It doesn't have to be because somebody's abusing them. But when the person really breaks down, and then they call out to Hashem, they cry out to Hashem out of the tears, that pathway to recognizing, to encountering Kadosh Baruch Hu, that's still available, even after the destruction of Eis HaMikdash. And that's the Shaar Dema'os, and that's Midas HaRachamim. Midas HaRachamim, to answer a person's cries from that type of tzaka, that kind of a tefillah. Not a regular tefillah, Shemon Esrei, the tefillah of tzaka. Okay, and that's different. That's the Gemara about the Shaar Dema'os are still open. Okay, that's different than the idea that HaKadosh Baruch Hu punishes abusers. That's the idea of punishing abusers. I mean, then even if nobody cries out, right? Still a Kadosh Baruch Hu punishes. There's still din. There's still mishpat. So right. There's these two things. Okay. Then I think with that point, we can see the story of Rabbi Eliezer and Gamliel a little bit differently. Is that originally when Rabbi Eliezer was didn't cry out. He would cry, but he wasn't mispalo. He never said tachnan. He never did tzaka. But still, HaKadosh Baruch Hu punished the world, right? The harvest was destroyed, and partially. And Rabbi Gamliel was almost killed because of the Midas Adin for what he did to Rabbi Eliezer. But when it was just Midas Adin, when it was just being punished for the Anaz Dvaran to Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Gamliel had a taina of L'shem Shemayim. That even though maybe he did go too far, or he harmed Rabbi Eliezer, but still it was L'shem Shemayim, and that L'shem Shemayim necessitated that he be involved in this activity. And once a person is involved in the activity, it's very hard to prevent it from going too far. It's just not something, ideally you avoid the activity of attacking somebody. But once he had to be involved in L'shem Shemayim, what's he supposed to do? What's he supposed to do? He's protecting the Torah, and Akash Baruch Hu knows in his heart. He had known this was not a personal thing. It was all L'shem Shemayim, to preserve the Masorah. And when it was just Midas Adin, that of punishing a person who victimizes somebody else, that is legitimate taina. L'shem Shemayim will save a person. And the storm went away. But once Rabbi Eliezer said tachnun, and he was tzoik, and he cried to Akash Baruch Hu in tefillah, right, and then tachnunim, then the hashkacha of the Midas HaRachamim to Rabbi Eliezer, that was Rabbi Gamliel's taina, was not enough to stand up to the tza'aka of Rabbi Eliezer. Then Rabbi Gamliel died. I was L'shem Shemayim, yes, it was L'shem Shemayim, but he did go too far. And that Taina would save Rabbi Gamliel from the Midas Adin, but it did not save Rabbi Gamliel once you had the second element of the Midas Harachamim, of listening to the Tza'aka of Rabbi Eliezer.
Rabbi Zimmer?
Yes, go ahead.
So what you're saying is this really had to do with the how they were treating each other, and it no longer had anything to do with who was right or, you know, MS versus preserving the Masorah?
Right, right. I mean, Rabbi Eliezer was right in terms of, or the Bas Kol said Rabbi Eliezer was right. Ultimately, in terms of the bigger machlokas of do you follow Rove or not, you know, the Masorah clearly went against Rabbi Eliezer. You know, who's to say whether he was really wrong in that question or not? But the Masorah, all the Chachmei Shul disagreed with him. And this was not for, this was not for that question. This is for the Onaz Dvarim that Rabbi Gamliel had, it seems that Rabbi Gamliel went to, he was the Nasi, and he, the way he did it was deemed too much. And that's what this is, the punishments came for. The suffer, the victimization that Rabbi Eliezer felt as a result of this process, that the punishments came for.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. So what's the idea that you have these two things, these dinner rachamim, and how does Rashi put these two gates together? Okay. So let's say like to say this is that according to Rashi the real gate, the real Midas HaRachamim, the Shar is the Shar Demos, it's the Gates of Tears. That's the more general, broader idea, that once the base of Mikdash has been destroyed, that's the only gate of Tefillah that's really open, is the Shar Demos, is the Tza'aka when a person breaks down. And that's not limited to Ona. Okay. The Midas HaDin, to punish somebody who abuses somebody else, that's by Ona. That's obviously abuse. So what happens is the Shar Ona is really the combination of the Shar Dema'os plus the Hashkach of the Midas HaDin to punish somebody who's Monah somebody else, who abuses somebody else. So Shar, when you have the combination of the Midas HaDin plus the Midas HaRachamim, that when one person verbally abuses somebody else and that victim cries out to Hashem, now the abuser is basically going to be punished for two reasons. The Midas HaDin, which always punishes somebody who abuses somebody else, plus the Midas HaRachamim that comes when a person is tzoik, the Shar Demaos. So when those two things combine, it's a different Hashgacha. The combination of the Din and the Rachamim that comes from the Shar Demaos that's always open, available to anybody who cries to Hashem for any reason, even not abuse, plus the Midas HaDin of Hashgacha that comes to punish somebody who verbally abuses somebody else, when those two things combine, then you call that Shari Ona. That's Shari Ona. And that's why when Rabbi Eliezer had cried in his tefillah and his tachnunim from being verbally abused, the Gemara calls it the Shari Ona. That's why Ema Shalom said to him, I am a Masorah that the Shari Ona are always open, even though she's referencing the Masorah of David HaMelech, which is referring to the Shari Demos. Because the Shari Ona is simply the Shari Demos in the particular case where the person is crying to Hashem because he's suffering from abuse. And those two things combined, which if you look at the Rashi in the very beginning of the sugya, it's open. He says a person should be zahir in the onas of his ishto, right? Onas dvarim letzara, because onasa krova lavo, per onas onasa mimahar lavo, that when you really have, when she cries, it's onas dvarim, that's the case of onas dvarim, plus you have the shari demos, and that makes the punishment come faster. The combination. Normally, Hashem would punish a person for abusing somebody else. But once she cries out and the Shar Demaos, those two Hashkachas combined, the Midas HaRachamim to save the victim, plus the Midas HaDin to punish the abuser. So the Midas HaRachamim works together and the punishment comes even faster. Immediately, as soon as Rabbi Eliezer said Tachnun, the punishment to Rabbi Gamliel, first of all, his taina didn't work, and it became immediate, very much quicker. That's how Rashi. Yeah, go ahead.
Just trying to understand, because it sounds like, in terms of the Midas HaDin, Rabban Gamliel wouldn't have deserved to have died, given that it was L'shem Shamayim. And it was only, it sounds like, once Rabbi Elazar accessed the Shari Demos. But
right.
it almost, I don't know, to me it just seems funny, like, there's no other resolution that could have sort of allowed for the outcome to sort of work both ways, such that you wouldn't have had to kill off, God wouldn't have had to kill off Rabban Gamliel, but at the same time, Rabbi Elazar would have been spared. Like, there's no middle ground. I don't know. There's something funny to me about that.
You know, I don't know. I don't know the middle ground. I'm not sure. Maybe by the end of this year, you'll see what it's like. You're asking a question in the framework of regular tefillah about, it's a good question. I don't know about alternative possibilities. Maybe at the end of this year. I'm not really explaining this. I'll be honest with you. Right now, I'm not explaining what's going on. The second half of this year, I'm going to have to try to explain it. And basically, I want to explain with the Ramban. And I have to bring in a bunch of other sources to explain. I'm just really trying to define the Rashi now. Define, you know, what he's learning in Shari Yonah is the combination. In terms of the story with Rabban Gamliel and Rabbi Eliezer, it would seem that Min HaDin Rabban Gamliel did deserve to die, because you see, Hashem was punishing him. He was going to destroy his boat. So you see Min HaDin, he was Chayv Misa. But he had a taina, and that taina is like, God was merachem on Rabbi Gamliel. God had rachmanas on Rabbi Gamliel because of his taina. There's a certain amount of, if a person does something wrong, but they're forced to engage in a situation that they would have preferred to avoid. So that's, and they have to engage in that, and they engage in a situation of Shem Shemayim. That's a reason to mirachim on that, for leniency and not to punish him. Meaning Min HaDin, he deserved, because he went too far and he was verbally abused. He abused Rabbi Eliezer, and he deserved Min HaDin to die. But his taina is that I don't want to engage. I would never have engaged in this whole thing. I'm attacking the Gadol Hador and destroying him, kicking out on the Sora. Why would I want to be doing that? You take the risk of going too far and doing more than you have to. Why would I want to do that? And he's saying that the only reason I had to engage in this was Hashem Shemayim, so there wouldn't be two Toros in Klal Yisrael. So have Rachmanis on me, because you know that I was forced to be involved in this. And then if a guy goes a little bit too far, I'm Chayv Misa. It's an awful situation to be in. So that's, he deserved Rachmanis, even though Min HaDin then he deserved to die. But that Rachmanis only lasted until Rabbi Eliezer himself was Tzorik. Once Rabbi Eliezer was Tzorik and the Midas HaRachamim shifted to Rabbi Eliezer, then Rabbi Gamliel's Taina no longer stood up. Which shows you, you know, the severity of Onas Tavarim. Even somebody like Rabbi Gamliel, who was acting like Shem Shemayim, but he did go too far. And once you had the combination of the Midas HaDin that he did deserve, plus Rabbi Eliezer's Tefillah, those two things combined, and then you have the Shari Yonah. That's the Shari Yonah. It's the Shari Dema'os combined with this idea of the special Hashkacha of Onah, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu punishes himself. All other Hashkachos Midas HaDin, HaKadosh Baruch Hu punishes through a Shliach, through the regular Hashkacha, the regular Hashkacha HaMalach, the regular system of how Midas HaDin works. But Onah's Dvarim, it's a different Hashkacha, Biyado. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it's a separate. The other means it's a different hashkacha to punish a person who victimized somebody through a Onas Dvarim. It's not the regular system of Midas HaDin, where a person gets punished. You know, there is din for all other veros. Eventually a person will get punished. But Onah is a separate hashkacha for Onas Dvarim, like HaKadosh Baruch Hu punishes. You know, and then there's the Shaar Demos and the Midas HaRachamim of a person who's Tzoik to Hashem through Shaar Demos. Those two things combine, and that hashkacha is miyad, it's immediately, and Rabban Gamliel died. Okay, it's miyad hunena.
Okay, thanks.
Okay, sure. That's what I want to do for defining, basically, the sheet of Rashi. Just to understand.
Sorry,
yes, go ahead.
Sorry. I'm just having trouble with the idea that the Rachmim is now comes about for Eliezer, right? Because he did Tachman. And that is now a result of the death of Rabban Gamliel. Do you think Rabban Eliezer wanted that? it seems like a tragedy to him. Like, why is that? It seems like nobody wins. Like, why is that? Maybe that's Rachman for him, that Rav Gamliel should die.
I mean, Rav Gamliel was the one who had orchestrated the entire thing of ruining his life, destroying him, of having everybody gang up on him, kicking him out of the Masorah, out of the base of Medrash, putting him in Nigo. So he was his
So when we think of Ms. Rachman, meaning the situation gets better for the person who's dominating, right? Does this make the situation better?
For Rabbi Eliezer? It would seem so.
Yeah.
It would seem so. It was bad. This is one of those tragic stories in the Gemara. The conflicts between Rabbi Gamliel and Rabbi Eliezer, there's a later conflict between Rabbi Gamliel and Rabbi Yeshua. That one was resolved a little better. Famous story where Rabbi Gamliel made Rabbi Yeshua carry Yom Kippur, which was his Yom Kippur when they had to work out the Moadim when they worked. So this was like, Rabbi Gamliel seems like a very tough personality. And he, came into base measures a little bit later in the, after they started, and he took control. He established authority. He was the one who went between the Romans and the others, but there seems to be some conflict, and he was very, very powerful, in terms of exerting his influence. And he did Lashem Shemayim. He felt it was necessary after Korban Abayas to have a powerful base Nasi, deal with the Romans, and also to unify the Masorah, make sure the Masorah, it wasn't obvious, the Masorah would continue. It's Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai asked for Yavnez Chachameha, and this is Chachameha. This is that generation of trying to establish it, and he felt he needed to be powerful, but to some degree, a person who has that power, the Nasi, can abuse that power or go too far. And, it's shocking because these are the Gedolei Hador, the great Rabbi Eliezer, Gadol, and Rabbi Gamliel. And nevertheless, I mean, yeah, it seems that it's, it was Rachamim to, he was Soik and Rabbi Gamliel died. It seems so. I hear the question. If you halavai, there should be no politics between Gedolei Yisrael. That shouldn't exist. Everybody should be perfected. And I shouldn't say it that way. What this story shows is even perfected people and who are acting like Shem Shemayim, you still have political conflict and you have institutions being torn apart. You have the involution you had it in throughout history. It's not just. The sometimes you have these tragic conflicts between the Gedolei Yisrael, even when everybody's acting the Shem Shemayim. And to some degree, it's because everybody's acting the Shem Shemayim is they're refusing to compromise. If each one holds, the other one's destroying the Masorah or endangering it. And Rabbi Lazar was serious about his position. It wasn't just he thought he was right about the Tano. He thought that it was that the system needs to change, and it's not the same way it was in Yerushalayim. And there's a difference between being in Lashkas HaGazus and being Chutz. And you can't. And it was it's. They both had their positions. They're both L'shem Shemayim, but that doesn't mean that you don't have these personality conflicts that lead to these tragic results. But I do want to say that I'm not really pretending to explain this Gemara Tanashof. No, I'm not really pretending to explain it. I really want to just pull out these two points of the two elements of Hona. Is Donas Dvarim of the Midas Adin, and then Rav Gamliel would have been saved. And then there's the Shar Demaos, which combines with it, and now you call it Shar Ona. It's called Shar Ona, the combination of the Shar Demaos from Tehillim, plus the Hashkacha of Ona. And that's why the Gemara references the Chutz Mishar Ona in this case. That's really what the main thing. You see also, again, that point of the Shar Demaos is access through Tachnunim. It's not access through... Rabbi Lezer davened every day. He davened three times a day. But still, Rabbi Gamliel didn't die. It's the Shar Demos is specifically accessed after davening. It's not really appropriate to engage in Sa'aka in the middle of Shemoneh Esrei. That's not what Shemoneh Esrei is for. Shemoneh Esrei is a different type of field. It's only Lifnei Hashem. There's a certain composure a person must have to present himself with Lifnei Hashem in Shemoneh Esrei. Sa'aka is really for Tachnunim after Tefillah. That's what I say. Like we say Slichos and Esara and the Tachnunim and Nofal Apanov. That's a different type of a tefillah tzaka, and you cannot engage in that in Shemoneh Esrei in Yud Ches. You can't just put that into Shemoneh Tefillah. It doesn't belong there. It has to be done after tefillah. Tachnunim is a key in tefillah, and you learn from this Gemara, in fact, that if you have a hefsek between your Shemona Esrei and your Tachnon that it's, I think you don't even say Tachnon if you have a Hefzik, if you speak, if you have Dvarim, you know, if you say something else. And that's what Rabbi Eliezer's wife was doing. She was creating a Hefzik. So Tzaka is something that is a Kiyam in Tefillah. It follows after Tefillah. It must be Mitzuraf to a person being with Hashem in Shemona Esrei. But nevertheless, it's a different type of a Tefillah, Tzaka, and it accesses a different pathway to prayer. And there's a different Hashgacha to Tzaka than there is for regular Tefillah. Regular Tefillah might be answered, might be not. Tzaka is different. It's guaranteed to be answered.
Rabbi, how come Rabbi Eliezer wasn't reinstated after Rabbi Gamliel was died?
The Gemara actually goes through that. And actually, it does in the next door when Rabbi Yeshua and Rabbi Gamliel got into their fight. And they removed, Rabbi Gamliel embarrassed Rabbi Yeshua. He made him stand up. He didn't let him sit down. And the base medrash got very angry at Rabbi Gamliel for embarrassing Rabbi Yeshua. Rabbi Yeshua was very, very well liked. And they basically removed Rabbi Gamliel from his position. And they didn't want to put Rabbi Yeshua back in to be the head because they said that he's a bar plukta. So even after Rabbi Eliezer, the better answer to your question is they all agreed with Rabbi Gamliel. That's the right answer. The right answer is they agreed to him. Rabbi Yeshua was on Rabbi Gamliel's side. All the Chacham were on Rabbi Gamliel's side. They agreed with him fundamentally that you can't have two Toros. And even though the Chorban Abayis and Tanedra is not in Yerushalayim anymore, still you can't have these types of Machlokasim. You have to agree to the rule of the majority. And you see, they didn't lift the Nidoy. He was, Rabbi Eliezer was still excommunicated. He was cut off from the Beis Medrash to the day he died. Only after he died did Rabbi Yeshua go and remove the excommunication, the Nidoy, from Rabbi Eliezer. So there's no Havamin of, you know, his fund, Rabbi Eliezer would never compromise his position. He never changed his position on what he held by the Tanor and the Rov. And the Chachmei Yisrael never changed their position. That's as long as you are refusing to accept Acharam Lahatos and Lo Bashamayim Hi, you can't be part of the Beis Medrash. You can't be part of Ar Masora. And that Machlokas never changed over the course of Rabbi Eliezer's life. So even when Rabbi Gamliel died, Rabbi Gamliel was leading the charge in terms of orchestrating the events on that day, but the rest of the Beis Medrash agreed with Rabbi Gamliel, and they weren't going to bring Rabbi Eliezer back because he was dangerous. He was dangerous to Minnesota because of his position. And it's tragic, but there was no real way to resolve this split in the Chachmei Yisrael. There's no real way to reconcile Rabbi Eliezer with the other Chachamim.
Unless you put him in charge.
But the position itself they didn't hold by. The position itself that he wouldn't go by majority. He wouldn't go by majority rule.
Okay.
You know, if you don't have a majority, then you're going to have arguments over the course of time as, you know, many, many arguments in the Gemara as, you know, and if you don't accept majority, you're just going to have, like we have nowadays, every rabbi says a different thing. Every shul is a different minhag, you just have many, many Torahs. There's Mechaber, and there's the Raman, there's Sfaradim, Ashkenazim, and Hasidim, and everybody does their own thing. And you just have what's the system of halacha, you know, since, like we have nowadays. This is what they were trying to prevent was from the situation we have nowadays, where there's many different systems of Torah from emerging. They tried to prevent as long as possible. And they felt that it was necessary to have a unified system of Torah from the authority of the Nasi and Sanhedrin, a relocated Sanhedrin. It was necessary to maintain that as long as possible, and that was their position. And they would not accept Rabbi Eliezer back into the Beis Medrash. Forget about being back in the Sanhedrin. They couldn't accept him back until he changed his position, and he accepted the idea of Rov and majority rule. And since he would never accept that, he was a danger, and they couldn't accept him back.
Okay, gotcha. Thanks.
But you're saying the Ona is not really from them putting him in Chayram. The Ona is because Rabbi Gamliel wanted to be do Sarfa Lefano.
So they
wouldn't retract that. Just
I'm
supporting
trying to say that.
That wasn't the problem.
Yeah, that's what I'm trying to say because that Rashi is Lefano. But I mean, it's possible to learn the Sugya that it was just the Nidoy itself, even though it was absolutely necessary. The bottom line is, Rabbi Eliezer is a gadol dor, and you victimized him, you abused him, and you made him cry and you did this to him, ruined his life, and he's a victim of abuse. Maybe it was necessary, Shem Shemayim, to show the world. You could, it's possible to learn that even though everything was necessary, that's still what they're being punished for. I'm not saying that, you know, I don't have a proof for it. I'm saying it's because in they engaged in activity, but they went too far. And what they could have done, I don't know, but you see Rabbi Akiva stepped in. Rabbi Akiva is the younger generation. Why is he telling them? But he's their Talmud. But he apparently realized that this had gone too far. And if somebody else had gone to Rabbi Elezer and didn't say in the most sensitive way that there was a danger of the whole world being destroyed, that the Midas had been to everybody for how they treated Rabbi Elezer, could have destroyed the whole world. Rabbi Akiva realized it. So Rabbi Akiva stepped up and he said, I'll let me go and I'll talk to him and I'll tell him. Rabbi Akiva spoke to him in the most sensitive way possible. He wore black. He sat to Adamos. He let Rabbi Eliezer ask him. He said, seems to me your friends have separated from you. He did it in the most sensitive way. And that was not Rabbi Gamliel's, I don't want to say his personality. That wasn't his tact. That's not the tact. It's not the approach he took. And it seems like Rabbi Akiva realized that there was a mistake here and you have to, he corrected as far as possible. But that's kind of why I'm learning the Gemara. They were Gamliel and they went too far and Rabbi Akiva noticed that and tried to correct it. But Rabbi Gamliel was forced to engage in the activity of L'shem Shemayim, but he went too far in it. So he has a taina to have rachim on me. I didn't want to do this to begin with. But once you go too far, ultimately you're subject to the Midas Adin.
Are you also explaining why the rest of the world was punished? Why did they have to? Why
no,
did,
that's, a good, that's a good question. I don't know. It bothered me also. I mean, what did the world do? Why the whole world? I don't know. It's a good question. I don't know. I guess the whole world was ganging up on him. Everybody turned him out. Everybody listened to Gamliel. It's a good question. Why? It doesn't seem like it was just Gamliel. It seems like everybody engaged in this excommunication and burning his stuff in front of him, and everybody was responsible. So, you know, to some degree, it seems like the society was culpable for how they treated Rabbi Eliezer. I don't know. You know, the Gemara doesn't give us enough information to speculate on that. Okay. So now let me try to move to the second half of this year here. And I want to explain what is going on. Why is this Midas Adin so strong and the Midas Arachamim of Soik, Bayonaz, Tvarim? Like, what's the theory behind it that generates this type of serious hashkafa? So I really want to use Ramban. I'm going to try to justify using this Ramban. It's Ramban and Mishpatim. And I really want to use Ramban to explain this whole area of Onaz Dvarim and the Shari Onah, the gates of abuse. I want to use Ramban. The problem is the Ramban is really speaking about something else. And the theory that he says seems to apply particularly to that case he's talking about. It doesn't seem to extend to our case. So I'm going to do a little bit of something to try to bridge the gap between the Ramban and our Sugya of Onaz Dvarim. Okay. And that's going to require us to get into the Dalet Umlala. Okay. The four unfortunates in the Torah, the people who are unfortunate in society. Okay. So let's start from the Torah, Torah Shebichtav Sav. Really Rashi, always so it's a parsha in a pasuk in Re'eh, we read it yesterday, talking about the Simchas HaRegel. So it says, V'samach l'fnei Hashem l'kecha, atu v'incho v'itecha v'avdecha v'masecha. So you should have the happiness in front of Hashem on the Regel, on the holidays. You, your sons, your daughters, and your son, your daughter, your slave, and your maidservant. V'halevi v'asher b'sherecha v'agir v'yasam v'aman asher b'kirbecha. Right? And also the ger, the convert, the yasam and amana, the orphan, the widow, and the levi. Okay, levi means a poor person because, like Rashi says, because the levi has no chelik v'nachala, he doesn't have a land, so bizmana beis hamikdash. I'm crying, don't worry. Okay. So the, bizmana beis hamikdash, the levi was poor. So Bezman, once the Beis HaMikdash is destroyed, the Levi has no special protection. It's just the Ami. Okay, so the four people, so Rashi is like this. He says, Arba Shali Keneged Arba Shacha. So my four against your four. Bincha, Bitech, Avdecha, V'Masecha. That's your four. And God's four is the Ani, the Levi, the Ger, the Yasam, and the Mana. Imata Mesamecha Shali, Ani Mesamecha Shafa. If you make my four happy, the Levi, Ger, Yasam, and Amana, I'll make sure your four are happy. Your son, your daughter, and your slaves and your maidservant. Okay? So you have the category of the Dalit, the four Umlalam. The poor person, the orphan, the widow, and the Ger. Okay. And these four, they come together in Pesukim in the Torah. And they come together, the Rambam in Hilchos Yantiv, in Perek Vav, and Hilchos Megillah. He talks about Simchas Regel. A person shouldn't just be Mesameach, a Simchas Kreso, or just him and his family, and he eats, and he has enjoys the Basar V'Yayin. And, the Sudas Purim. But rather, you should be Mesameach, the Leva Amlalem, the Ani, the Ger Yasam and Amana. The Rambam lists these four in Hilchos Yantiv and Hilchos Megillah. He says, whoever is Misameach, the Leva of these unfortunate people, he's done with the Shechina, Kadosh Baruch Hu is Misameach, the Leva. So you have these categories of the four, the Arba Umlalam. Okay? Again, the Ger, the Ani, the Yasam and the Amana. Okay, good. Now, now the key to the second half of this year is basically these six Psukim in Mishpatim. So it's Perachav Beis, Pasuk Chaf to Chafav. So let me read these Psukim, and then we'll show a few Rambams on them. So the Pasuk Chaf says like this. V'ger lo sona v'lo silchatzenu. Ki ger me yisim beretz Mitzrayim. So the convert, you should not, Rashi's lo sona means a nazfarim. You should not verbally abuse the ger. V'lo silchatzenu means a nas mamon. Rashi's gzeilas mamon, robbing him. Because you were gerim in Mitzrayim. Okay, you were also foreigners in Mitzrayim. Call amana v'yasam lo sa'anun. Any widow and orphan do not afflict. It's not this, it's not onah, it's sa'anun, it's inoy. It's cause them suffering. Intane sane oso. If you afflict him, meaning him in the singular, either the yasam or the amana, and I think perhaps even the ger. If he just calls out to me, I will hear his cries. And I'll get angry and I will kill you with the sword. And your wives will be widows and your children will be orphans. Okay. That's the first parsha. It has the onaz dvarim, onaz mamon of the ger. It has the idea of not afflicting the widow and the orphan. And if they cry out to Hashem, he will hear their cry, and he will kill you, and your wife will be a widow, and your children will be orphans. Then the next parsha. Im kesef talves es ami es hani imach. Lo si elo kenosha, lo si simun alav nashach. So if you lend, when you lend money to a poor person, so don't act like a creditor. Okay, don't act like a creditor means, like the halacha formulates it, is that if you know, Rashi says, if you know that he doesn't have what he owes you, you can't pressure him for the money. Okay, you can't even, the halacha Zeran brings down is you can't even show your face to him, you can't even go near him, because he'll get scared or he'll feel embarrassed. So there's an isser. Once somebody owes you money, you can't do something to take advantage of that situation and press him and pressure him and use that. Rabban explains here, it means, there's a pasuk is Eved Lo V'Lish Malva. When a person owes you money, so there's like a certain subservience, there's a certain avdus that the borrower has to the creditor, and the creditor is not allowed to take advantage of that power structure, that power relationship, and abuse and make the borrower feel bad. Lo Sila Kenosha. And you can't charge him with interest. Im Chavol Tachbol Samas Re'echa Ad Bo Hashem Shishivenelo. If you take collateral, you have to return it to him. If it's like a blanket or something like that, you have to return it to him for the night. But in Dvarmis, if it's closer in the day, you have to give it to him for the day. You can't take collateral. You have to constantly be giving it back to him so he can use it. Kihi kisuso levada. He simlas l'oro. It's his only clothes. It's his only shirt. It's what he covers his skin in. Meyishka. What's he gonna sleep in if he doesn't have a blanket? If he cries out to me, v'shemati, I will hear it. Ki chananani, because I said I'm chanan, I'm gracious, compassionate. Okay. So those are the six psukim. Okay, the anasa of the ger, the yasam and the almana, and the ani. These four again. These are the psukim in Parshas Mishpatim, right, which was part of the Sefer Bris of Kabbalah Satorah, right? Sefer Mishpatim today, according to Ramban, beautiful Nyan Diyama. Okay, so it's these four people, the ani, yasa, almana, and the ger, of them being abused and crying out to Hashem. And when Hashem, these psukim, Hashem hears their cries. Right, open Tarshish Chasav. That's by the Yasam Amana and perhaps the Ger also. And then you also have Elai, the Shemati, Kanani, by the Ani. Okay. So again, these four. Now the Rambam by Onaz Ger has a fascinating position. The Rambam holds that the Onaz Ger, that whenever you violate, the Torah sometimes doubles up a lav, that if you do onaz mamon, you also have the iser by a ger of twice. If you rip off a ger, you're over the regular one by every Jew, and you're over the one by Yisrael, by regular Jew, and by a ger, a second one by a ger. And the same thing onaz dvarim by the ger. If you verbally abuse a ger, you're over the general one that applies to every Jew, and you're also over a specific one of abusing a ger. The Rambam holds a unique position, is that when you verbally abuse a ger, you're over three lav. The one verbal abuse of a ger in particular, one by a Jew, and the one of financially abusing a ger. So when you verbally abuse a ger, you're over the financial abuse of a ger. And if you financially abuse a ger, you rip them off, you're over the one of the onas dvarim of a Yisrael. It's complicated. But basically the theory is that the Torah recognized that a ger is his nefesh, is his mar, and his shafel. And when a normal person, if you financially abuse him, so it has one type of effect. He just says, you know, he says that all it was is just money. It's just money. It's not. It wasn't anything deeper than that. He didn't attack my personality, my person, or anything like that. And if a person calls him names, he just sticks and stones will break by bones. Names will never. You didn't do anything. You just call me names. You know. So there's an advantage of I shouldn't say advantage, but when a person gets abused, either financially or monetarily, it's two different realms of his personality. By the ger, the Torah realizes that when you financially abuse him in one way, it spills over to verbal abuse. The verbal abuse spills over to financial abuse. The Torah introduced this idea of the ger, of onaz dvarim, onaz mamon, by the ger, because he's very sensitive, and when you abuse him, and the way you abuse a Yisrael, it hurts him more when you treat him, when you victimize him in these different ways. Okay, you see, Rabbi Eli Feder gave a shiur on that, working out those Rambams, exactly how that works. But there's a separate law over here of onaz dvarim, onaz mamon by the ger. Okay, then you have the lavin by the ani, right? You can't be like a creditor to him, and you have a Rambam in. I want to focus specifically on the idea of the tefillah, because that's what I'm going to need for this Rambam here. Is on the Rambam's in Hilchos Matnas Aniyim, Paragid Alacha Gimel. So he says, whoever is a Malam Einav Min Tzedaka, he ignores the Ani. So he's called a Chote, V'kari Lech Al Shem V'ha Yibacha Chet, a Pasuk, called a Chet, and he says, HaKash Baruch Hu Kari L'Shavas Aniyim. Hashem is close to the cries of the poor people. Shinemar Shavas Aniyim Ata Tishma. Okay, the cries of the Ani, of the poor person, you hear, apparently that's not an actual Pasuk, that's from a Tfilo, that's from Sfaradim Av. Okay. Lefikach, Ram says, Tzarkel hizar mitza'akasam. You have to be very careful about doing something that's going to cause them to cry out, Sharei bris kerusalehem. Because there is a covenant, there's a deal that Kadosh Baruch Hu made with Aniyim. Shenemar v'haya ki yitzak elai v'shemati kichanen ani. So there's a bris kerusa, a bris of tefillah, that when the ani calls out, Hashem hears, because Hashem is chanan. He's a merachem, he's a is Rachmanos and Chaninos on the Ani. Okay. So you have the, a special Hashkacha. Okay. Let me just explain what I'm trying to do here. What I'm trying to do is I'm trying to show that this phenomenon that we've seen by Onaz Dvarim is the way the Torah talks about the Ger, the Ani, and the Yasam and Namana. Cause I want to basically relate the two areas to each other. Okay. That's what I'm doing. So you see that there's this bris krusa, that Kadosh Baruch Hu hears the tzaaka of the ani, is from this pasuk, "Vayki Yitzak Elai Veshmati Kichananani." Okay, I'm trying to almost show where did Chazal get this idea of the Shar Demos and the Shar Ona, and I think it's really from the psukim and the hashgacha of Tzaka that the Torah talks about when it talks about the Ger, the Ani, and the Yasam and Amana. Okay, that's where I'm going with this. So you see, by the Ani, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says that there's a bris krusa. Whenever he's tzaddik, that Hashem listens to the cry of the Ani. Okay. And then you have the Rambam in Hilchos Deos, Perek Vav Halacha Yod. So that the Rambam says is Chayv Adam Lihali Hizahar Be'a Yisomim Ve'amanos, Neshin Nafshin Shvelim Me'od V'ruchan Nemucha. A person has to be very careful for widows and orphans, because they're very low self-esteem, they're depressed, they're very sensitive, af bishayim ba'yin, they're very wealthy, even the widow of the king and the orphans of the king, there's an isser, it applies equally to them. Shenemar kol amana v'yasem lo sanim. V'heich no'ag, so how you supposed to treat them, is you can only speak to them very softly, you have to treat them in a kavod, you can't lo yachiv gufam be'avoda, you can't physically make them overwork them, below liban bedvarim, you can't say things to them, and you viyachasam amonam yasamam atzol, you have to be more careful about their money more than your own money, as opposed to regular Jews, vaflerech kamocha, it's just your money and their money is the same, yasamam amonam, you have to be more careful about their money, and anybody who angers them, who provokes them, attacks them, ohechav liban, or radabem, or really, you know, exercises the dominion over them, of a mamonam, or destroys their money, harizer belosasi, over on this losasi, they have losanam. If somebody physically abuses them or verbally attacks them, abuses them. So even though there's no malchus for this, there's an onus is open to Torah. Okay. The Rambam Sefer Mitzvos points out this is a unique chiyav misa. It's not the regular chiyav misa b'dei shamayim. For this one lav in the Torah, there's a unique onesh that is open to Torah, that if you cause suffering to a yasam and amana, God will kill you with the sword, and your wife will be an amana, and your kids will be a soma. That's the onesh. That is the onesh for causing suffering to the yasam and the amana. Okay, that is the onesh. It's mefurash in the Torah. Bris karas lahem ish amar v'haya olam, shekozman shem tzoke mechamas heinenen. There's a bris, right? The bris, same thing, same lashon the Ram had by the Ani. There's a bris with them that whenever they call out from chamas, from injustice, they're answered. Shenemar kim tzolak yitzak elai shamoa ashmat zakaso. Okay. So same, the pasuk before from the parsha mishpatim. There's a bris with them when they call out from injustice that they suffer at the hands of their oppressors. Hashem hears their cries. Okay. Same thing, a bris krusa by the yasam and almano and the ani. Okay. So, Why is there a separate lav of causing losanim? See, this is Hilchos Deos. Why didn't the Torah just make a lav of anaz dvarim by the yasam and amana, like it did by the ger? Right? Why is there only a separate lav by the yasam and amana? And if you look really in Hilchos Deos in the Koseres, the Rambam says he doesn't say yasam and amana. He says Shlolaanos umlalim, not to cause suffering to an umlal, somebody who's unfortunate, right? And the question is, shlolaanos umlalim, the umlal really includes this four types of unfortunates, people who are right there, the lower, you know, more depressed part of society. So there's four categories, the ani, the ger, the yasam and the amana. So if that's the koseris, is not to cause suffering to the umlal, why is this love of yasam and amana only, why the law of losa'ana not to cause them suffering only by yasam and amana? Right, that the pasuk says, kol amana v'yasam losa'ana. So why is it? Okay. So, I think the answer is if you look at this law by yasam and amana, it's the isser is to even treat them like regular people. It's not onaz dvarim. See, by the ger, the isser was onaz dvarim, verbally abusing a person. In the Gemara's cases, we discussed what onaz dvarim is. But by yasam and amana, it's even if you speak to them like you speak to a regular person, they're sensitive to that. They're not a regular person. They've went through a tragedy and they're super sensitive to your words or your actions. And if you treat them like you treat a regular person, they're going to suffer and it's going to hurt them. A regular person, you could make a joke with them and that's okay. It doesn't bother them. It's funny. A yasman amana, they're, you can't make a joke with them. You can't, they have no tolerance for any kind of abuse, but not what would be considered non-abusive behavior to a regular Yisrael is considered abusive behavior to a Yasan Amana because they're so sensitive. And the Torah forces you, obligates you to treat them differently, treat them with kitty gloves. You cannot treat a Yasan Amana the way you treat everybody else. And if you treat them the way you treat everybody else will be totally fine. That's the way you treat everybody else. Don't abuse anybody else. A regular Jew, don't verbally abuse them, don't embarrass them, don't do things like that. But you can talk to them normally. And a Yasan Amana, you have to speak softly. You have to speak quietly. You have to speak, treat them differently. Okay? But that's only a Yasan Amana. The other two of the Umlalim, the Ger and the Ani, that's not the way to treat them. The Ger does not want to be treated differently from any other Jew. If you were to treat the Ger, speak softly to him, don't joke around with the Ger, that's the opposite. All the Ger wants is he wants to be one of included. He wants to be one of an insider. He doesn't want to be looked as an outsider, a foreigner. He wants to be one of the guys. He wants to bow around with you. He wants to be treated regularly. And in fact, if you were to treat him and speak to the Ger very softly and very quietly, and I don't want to hurt your feelings and I don't want to joke around with you or whatever it is, that's arguably being oppressing him and treating him like he's different. And the same thing with the Ani. The Ani who owes money, he doesn't want to be treated any differently. He wants to come to shul and be like everybody else. He wants to be able to engage in the jokes with everybody else and be like one of the guys. He does not want anybody to treat him any differently because of his poverty, his monetary situation. Okay, and therefore the Torah cannot include in the Isser of Lo Sa'anun anybody besides the Yasam and the Amana. The Ani and the Ger, it would be inappropriate to say treat them special. No, if you abuse them, if you abuse the Ani in monetary manners by using your monetary power over him, by the fact that if he owes you money, by using that that shibud that he has, and you abuse him financially, or if you don't return collateral that you have from him in financial matters, then the Torah says the specific lavim, don't financially abuse the Ani. But it's the lavim and the Ani are limited to the financial realm, economic realm. In the social realm, treat the Ani like he's a regular person. The same thing with the Ger. You're only violating the law of the Ger when you verbally abuse him in a way that it would be wrong to a regular Jew. It's twice as wrong to a Ger. Okay? But the Yasan Amana, you have to realize they're super sensitive and therefore you can't even treat them like regular people. And if you do, then God will kill you. Right? And if they call out, and now all this group, the Ger, Yasan Amana, and the Ani, if they have this bris karas lahem, that Misham Rav HaYolam, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, anytime they call out to Hashem, they're answered. Okay. And I want to submit to you that this is the Shar Demos. This is the Hashkacha of Tzaka. This is the same Hashkacha that the Gemara is referring to by Anaz Dvarim. Even though Anaz Dvarim is not a Ger Yasam Amana, or an Ani, still I think that these are the exact same Hashkachas of Tzaka. The Bris Karas Lahem, right, is the Shar Demos, the Shari Ona, right? Call him Shem Tzaki Mechamas Hem Nanen. That this is the exact same Hashkacha. Okay, I'm going to try to justify that. That's what I'm going to try to, the Ramban. Okay. One other, Rashi to try to show that it's the same Hashkacha is there's a Rashi in Dvarim which says that the Torah in Sefer Dvarim has a similar pasuk. It's Rashi, it's Dvarim Tezvav Tes. Okay. It says Yisham Lecha Peniya Davar Im Lavacha Belia Alim or Karva Shasa Sheva Shasa Shmita Vara Incha Ba'achicha Avyon Velo Sitin Lo. You're not going to make a loan to somebody because Shmita is coming. You don't want the loan to get knocked out. V'kara lecha l'Hashem v'hayibachachit. He'll call out to about you to Hashem, and there'll be a sin for you. It'll be considered as the yirchote. So Rashi says v'hayibachachit mikol makom afilu lo yikra. Even if the ami doesn't call out, right? Rashi says there's no mitzvah for him to call Hashem, right? Yachal mitzvah tamalom v'lo yikra. He doesn't have to call out, right? He doesn't have to call out. But even if the ami doesn't call out to Hashem, still the bichit im kain lama nema v'kari lecha. So if so, why does the pasuk say that he'll call to Hashem? Me'marani li pari al yedei kore yosem yishen kore. That Kadosh Baruch Hu punishes the person who oppresses the poor person, the ani. He will punish that person faster if the ani calls out to Hashem than if the ani doesn't call out to Hashem. Okay. So you see the exact same paradigm that we tried to show. I tried to show by Onas Devarim. Exists by the ani, all right, and by these four, that a kaddish, there is a midas adin to punish anybody who oppresses the ani, the ger, the yasam and the mana, the arba umalam. There is a midas adin, but there's a bris krusalahem that when they call out, there's a midas harachrim to save them, and those two things combine, right? Either way, a kaddish baruch Hu is going to punish you, but a kaddish baruch Hu will punish you faster. There's a tziruf of the midah of Akash Baruch Hu that he's shomea tzaakasam, and he hears their cries. That combines with the midas adin of punishing any person who abuses the ani, and those two things combine, and it creates a tziraf, and the unified system, Rashi says, mimaran li paros. God punishes faster. That's the exact same phenomenon we saw by the Gemara by Shari Ona, the Shari Demos. Be careful for the dima, the cries of your wife, your anas varm by your wife, because her anas krovalavo, the pronouns are closer because of the shar demos. If you do anas varm and then she cries, Hashem, you'll be punished even faster. Okay. So the exact same phenomenon, in a sense, I'd say the hallmark of the way that the Gemara had set up, at least according to Rashi, the hashkacha of anas varm, of there's this midas adin, and then there's this unique hashkacha of midas harachamim, for it to be shamea that sa'akasa from Onas Dvarim, and then those two things combined in Shari Ona. So the exact same phenomenon we find playing out in the Torah through the phenomenon by the Ger Yasam Amana and the Ani, that there's a midas adin to punish any person who abuses them, who takes advantage of them, who you know, now it's true they're different people, like we said, the Yasam Amana, it's even to treat them like a regular person, this Hashkacha acts. The ger and the ani, it's if you abuse them, take advantage of them monetarily or in asvarim, things like that. But nevertheless, whatever form of abuse relates to these particular people, there's the midas adin to punish the person. And then if they cry out to Hashem, bris krusalem, there's a deal. Kadosh Baruch Hu has a special pathway to tefillah. They have a hotline to Kadosh Baruch Hu. If they're being abused, all they have to do is call to Hashem. Hashem hears their cries and he kills you, right? And he's going to kill you. Okay, it's the same phenomenon. Okay.
Rabbi Zimmer?
So, yes, go ahead.
It sounded like from the Gemara we did in Bav Metzia that you had the Shari Demos, the Shari Ona, that those work together even for a regular person. So I guess what's the difference in the Hashgacha between a regular person and the Da'od Umlala?
Right. Yeah, exactly. Right. I'm trying to claim, and this is why this year is a little bit long, because I have to justify it. I'm trying to claim that it's the same exact hashgacha. It's not different. It's just to jump to what I'm going to say what I'm trying to show is that this hashgacha, the Chazal derived, the primary place is whole hashgacha from the Gemara that we did by Anas Dvarim. The primary place it's found in the Torah is by the Ger Yasaman and the Ani. That's where it's found. Open the Torah Mefurash. That you're punishing a person, and me is a din, but if he cries out, it comes faster, and there's a bris krusalem, and the Gemara is applying that to Onas Dvarim, which is not just Ger Yasam Amana, it's any Yisrael who suffers the verbal abuse. Okay, and that's what I'm really trying to do here. And I'm going to try to explain the theory the Ramban has by the Ger Yasam Amana. I'm going to try to apply that to Onas Dvarim. Okay. But what we did in the first half of this year was Onas Dvarim. Now, hopefully, I've just justified that the key elements that we showed existed by Anas Dvarim, the Midas Adin, the Midas Harachamim, and Tzaka, and the combination of the two, in Shari Ona, those phenomenon are open in the Torah, according to Rashi and the Rambam, open in by these people in particular, the Ger Yasem Amano and the Ani. Okay. Why should that be? Okay. So now we're up to what I was trying to get to the whole time. Okay. This Ramban, and this Ramban on these Parsha Mishpatim. This is the last source. Okay. And we'll just try to, apply the Ramban's idea. Because you'll see it's not so simple to apply the Ramban's idea to Nas Tvar. Okay. So the question like this is the Torah says when it gave an additional lav of Onaz Dvarim and Onaz Mamon to the Ger, it says, Ger lo sonav lo sechatsenu, ki ger meisim barash mitzrayim. So the reason it says don't verbally abuse or monetarily abuse a Ger is because you were also Gerim in Mitzrayim. The question is, what's the sense of that? Why is that a justification for how Torah explains the rationale for not abusing a Ger? So Rabban says like this, V'anachon be'enai ki yomar, lo sona ger v'lo sechatsenu, v'tachshav she'en lo matzlam yadcha. Do not abuse the ger and oppress him. And you think that nobody can save him from your hand? Ki ata yadata, you know, she'isim ger mitzrayim, you know what happened. You were ger mitzrayim. V'ra'isis alachat seshim mitzrayim lo chatsim esdem. And Hashem says, I saw the oppression that the Egyptians were doing to you. And I took revenge on them for you. I see, Hashem says, I see the tears of those who are oppressed and have nobody to comfort them. And those who oppress them and have all the power and they have no power. The Ashukim, the ones who are the victims, they have no power. They're helpless. And I save every person from who's being oppressed by somebody who's more powerful than him. Same thing. Don't afflict the widow and the orphan because I hear their cries. They don't have any confidence in themselves. They're totally, self-esteem, no ability, no security in themselves. Rather, they rely on me, Hashem says. Okay. Upasak ha'acher says, you know the way ger is. You were ger mitzrayim. Says yedatim ki kol ger nashos shvelo. Every ger when he comes to join another nation, his psyche is low spirits, depressed. And he moans and he cries. Ve'enav tamei Hashem. All he has is Hashem. He just turns to Hashem. Ve'yirachem elav kasher richam aleichem. And Hashem will have rachmanos on him, just like he had rachmanos on you in Mitzrayim. Kmo shekasav. The Bnei Yisrael groaned from the avoda, the work the Egyptians did to us. We called out to Hashem, we cried out to Hashem, and our cries went up to Hashem from the avoda. It wasn't min avoda. We were saved from Mitzrayim not because of our schusim that we deserve to be saved. Kadosh Baruch Hu had rachmanos on us because we were being oppressed by the Egyptians. Another place Ramban goes through it a little bit also is that, is the schus of the avos, but Yitzias Mitzrayim was a combination of multiple streams of hashgacha. One of them was the schus avos, there's three. The schus avos, the hashgacha to save the victim from his oppressor, and the Egyptians were oppressing us, okay, which is a universal hashgacha. Applies in many cases, applied to Bnei Yisrael Mitzrayim, and the idea of Zaka and Tzoik, that we called out from the injustice that we were suffering. And that's really why Yitzias Mitzrayim happened, and is what you really say in the Seder. That's why Yitzias Mitzrayim happened. And we know that. Every year in the Seder, we talk about this. And Hashem's saying to you, how could you go and treat the Ger that way? Are you stupid? Do you not realize that the whole story of Yitzias Mitzrayim, where this nation came from, what I did to the Egyptians, why did I do it to the Egyptians? Not because you were so great. Because they were oppressing you and they were victimizing you and you cried out to Hashem from your suffering and I listened to that because I save every victim from his abusers who takes advantage of the power structure of society and really victimizes the low person, the weak person, the ger, the foreigner, and he sets him aside and tortures him. And there's a shkacha that comes in to save him. Why? Because he has nobody else besides the Kadosh Baruch Hu. Nobody else besides the Kadosh Baruch Hu. And then Rabban says, explains again by the Yasam and Elmana. He says, "Vanachem be'inai ki yomar im ane sane'o." So if you afflict the Yasam and Elmana, Rakin tzok yitzak elai bevad. Miyad esh matzakas el. All he has to do is cry out to me and I'll hear. And then it's tzarch l'davrach klal. He doesn't need to do anything else. Ki eni oshi enu ve'en kam osa mimcha. I will save him and I will take revenge for him on you. V'hatam, what's the reason? What's the svara? Why is this a shkacha exist? Ki ata lochitz osa mish ein lo moshiyam yadcha. You are oppressing him because you think he has nobody to save him from your hand. But he is really being helped and he has the support more than any other person. Most people, they have friends, they have family, they have somebody to go to. Somebody's bullying them, somebody's abusing them. They have somebody to go to protect them. But on their friends, family, who maybe the people will be able to, maybe they won't. But this person, the Yasam and the Amana, simply by crying out to Hashem, Hashem will save them and he'll take revenge on you. There's many psukim, if you follow through the Tanakh, you'll see many psukim that allude to this Ashkacha. Don't rob the poor person, the destitute person, just because he's poor. Don't crush, don't oppress the ani. The ani in your city, ki Hashem yariv'am, Hashem is their champion, right? Yomar al tigzal dal bavor shudal ve'in lo osrim. Don't think you can just crush the poor person and take advantage of them because they're in the lower economic strata society. Al tadake ani Hashem b'shrecha, ki Hashem yariv bavoram. Hashem is their champion. Who's fighting for them? Who's defending them? Hashem. They don't have regular basav adam. V'chein amar. They have a stronger redeemer, a stronger protector, a stronger champion than anybody else. Afkan, same thing here. Yomar ki betzakasa bevan yivasheya. So just through crying out, Akash Baruch Hu saves them. What's this theory? What's the fear of the Ramban? Is that the reason why the Tashkach exists differently by the Yasam and the Amana and the Ger and the Ani is because these are people in society who don't have anybody else to protect them. And ultimately, when they suffer abuse, any kind of abuse, they turn to Hashem. They cry to Hashem. And they have nobody else. They have nobody else. They turn to Hashem in a way that nobody else does. And if you take advantage of them and you oppress them and you abuse them, and the reason you do that is because you think I can get away with it here. Because who's going to protect them? There's no father. There's no husband. They have no money. They have no connections. They have no political connections. There's no consequences here. That's what you're doing. Ultimately, what you're really denying is you're really denying HaKadosh Baruch Hu's mishpat. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is a dayan al manos, that he's the one who's yariv rivam. That if you commit an injustice, he punishes you. And normally for a regular person, there's the mishpat of Bnei Adam, of Beis Din, or social justice, what other people, society can impose justice. But for them, ultimately you're denying that HaKadosh Baruch Hu does mishpat and will punish you for abusing them and oppressing them. And implicit in the attack on the Yasam and the Amana and the Ger and the Ani, implicit is a denial of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. You're denying that Hashem protects them, that Hashem does mishpat. And the reason why you're picking on them is because you think there's nobody to protect them. So the abuse of these four umlalim, is ultimately a denial that Hashem is their guardian and that Hashem does mishpat in this world. And that's why it's different. And that's why it engenders. That's the Rashi read, is you take care of my four, I'll take care of your four. These are Hashem's. These four are from Hashem. They don't have anybody else to protect them. Society does not protect them. They get abused. They get brutalized by the more wealthy people in society, the more well-connected people in society, the ones who are, you know, citizens, and they've been they have connections. They've been in the country for years. Those people oppress the lower strata of society. And the only people that these poor people can turn to is HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And to oppress them is to deny HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's why going back to why the Gemara. Okay, we're going to go back to the second. Now, this is this is what I want to say is the key element of what brings about this hashkacha of the Mias Adin and the Mias Rachamim, of you're rejecting that God does Mishpat, because you're saying I can pick on him, there's no consequence of Mishpat, and you're rejecting that God is their champion. And therefore, when they cry, they're crying to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Again, the two elements, okay? Their cries to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, he's Yariv Rivam, and also you're denying that there's any Mishpat, any consequences. Okay. And it's that attack on the reality of a God and his hashkacha is what engenders such a serious response from a Kadosh Baruch Hu. Okay, because you're attacking God, you're attacking his mishpat and his rachamim, and saying he doesn't exist, he doesn't protect them, he's less than v'les dayim. Okay. Now, l'chora, you would say that's only by these four. This wouldn't apply to a regular person. And this is the Ramban I want to use for a Nazvarim, but the problem is the whole theory of the Ramban seems to be unique to the Dalet Umlalim. It doesn't seem to necessarily transfer to everybody else. Why, according to what I'm saying, why would the Gemara and the develop a whole theory of a Naz Dvarim, which basically is taking this hashkacha of the Bris Krusa to the Dalet Umlalim and the Midas Adin to protect the Dalet Umlalim, why would it essentially take that hashkacha and replicate it by a Naz Dvarim? Because it's the same hashkacha. It's not, there aren't two sharim. The tzaka of the ani and the yosom and the amana, they're all going through the shahr demos, the shahr yonah. It's the same shahr. There's only one shahr that's still open. So the Gemara is essentially referring to, when it says shahr demos is open, it's referring to this. This is the hashkacha it's referring to, psukim in the Torah, bris krusalem. Why is it doing that? So I think is that what the Gemara is doing is it's saying that when you verbally abuse somebody and you bully them and you victimize them, it's true they're not categorically umlalam. But in any society, any group of friends, there's the cool kids and there's the not cool kids. And there's an employer and his employee. And there's many situations of power structure in society that come about economically. It could be socially, it could be a teacher and a student, a parent and a child. There are many situations where one person has power over the other one. And then not every time, the victim is not always one of the technical four categories of protected individuals in the Torah. Okay, sometimes the individual is a regular person, but they're a weak person, and they're like the chinuch says, they have no koach to be nezar. They don't have the ability to stand up to the cool kid, and they gang up on them, and they embarrass them, they humiliate them, they torture them, they bully them online, in the classroom, in person, and they destroy their lives verbally, and they're emotionally, psychological torture. And there are many situations like that. So that situation is even though they're not technically one of the four classes of protected individuals, the Ger Yasaman and the Ani, what the Gemara is saying is that if they're still victims and they're still bullied, and it's the exact same phenomenon of that person only has, nobody protects that kid. The kid who's being abused by all his friends, that teenager who's being sent into the corner, who's crying at home when they get home at night because they have no friends and their kids are making fun of them. That person cries out to Hashem. That person has nobody to protect them. And that person has exact same hashkacha that the Dalet Umlalim have. Because it's the exact same phenomenon. It's somebody who has nobody else besides Hashem. And when you person, and to victimize them and to bully them and abuse them verbally and psychologically, that's ultimately the exact same thing. You're denying Kadosh Baruch Hu's mishpat. You're denying his rachamim. You're not worried that they're going to cry out to Hashem. And that's onaz dvarim is when a person is the victim of psychological verbal abuse, more so than financial abuse, more so than being ripped off, much more when they're being psychologically bullied, that person accesses through the shahr onah, they access the same hashkacha that's normally only available to the ger yasama mana and the ani. To become a victim of verbal abuse opens up a pathway to prayer, a pathway to tzaka that lets the person encounter Kadosh Baruch Hu, have a pigia with a Kadosh Baruch Hu through the demos and through the cries. And it accesses this hashkacha, the bris krusa, that normally exists by the Dalet Umlalim. Because to abuse these people is ultimately the same denial of a Kadosh Baruch Hu's mishpat and his rachamim, just like it is the ger, the asam, and amana. And that's why, I believe, is why the Kadosh Baruch Hu punishes by Naz Dvarim biyado, not through a shliach. Because by Naz Dvarim, you're attacking Hashem. You're attacking Hashem himself, saying he's not their champion. So you see, you're attacking me. You're saying, I can't protect them. Kadosh Baruch Hu says, I'll kill you. I'm the one who's going to do it. It's biyado, he does it himself. Because you're attacking him, he does it himself. and also why the Gemara, I believe, puts it together, the Gimel, from the Pirka, the curtain is not a mafsik, and it puts on Naz Dvarim, Gezel, and Avodah Zarah. Because I believe the Gezel is Al Tigzel Dal, Ki Dalhu, it's the same thing. It's you're robbing the poor person because he's poor. That's Gzela. Naz Dvarim is bullying and victimizing anybody. And Avodah Zarah is, the essence of Avodah Zarah is the Kofar Beker. Okay, so all three of these people, the Avodah Zarah, the one who robs the poor person, specifically the wealthy taking advantage of the poor people, which also happens in all societies, and the Anas Dvarim of a person using some sort of power structure, social structure to victimize somebody else, those two people are all the same, and they come together in one Hashgacha. Okay, there are certain nuances and differences, but I believe, and this is more or less the whole point of this year, is the whole Midas Hadin and Midas Harachamim that applies to Naz Dvarim and the unification of Shar Demos and Ona in the Shari Ona, that is the Gemara deriving something, extending the concept of a person who abuses the Yasan, the Mana, the Ger, and the Ani, and the Bris Krusa and the Tza'aka that exists by those four Umlalim. The Torah, the Gemara is realizing by Naz Dvarim, a regular Jew can be transformed into one of these four Umlalim. And even though they're not in general a category of a protected person, they become, when they're the victim of abuse, psychological, verbal abuse, they become subject. And Hashem becomes their champion, and he protects them, and he punishes the abuser and in the most serious or strong ways, just like Hashem protects the Ger, Yasam, Aman, and the Ani. Okay. That is basically it. Are there any questions on this year? Wow, so clear. Okay. If there are no more questions, then thank you very, very, very much. I hope it was clear. Yeah, go ahead.
So when you have like a person who's getting bullied in school, and that guy, when you're saying that he gets to the same Shari Ona as the Yatam and the Almana, that's right. Not necessarily because of how much he's suffering, but rather because of the bullier denying that God is his champion, right? It's not a matter of necessarily the effect of what happened to the guy, but on the offender and his denial of God.
good question. Yeah, I mean, I'm really saying both. I'm really saying both. It's a combination of factors. Is that the bullier is denying God's mishpat and God's rachamim. But also, I'm saying the Shari Tefillah from the Shari Demos. What I was trying to say is that the Shari Demos are open, that when a person, even if he's not the victim of abuse, but just simply he breaks down because, you know, gets into an unfortunate car accident and that person becomes crippled, a situation like that. So that person encounters God in a different way in his tefillah. So the Shara Tefillah, Shara Demos is still open to that person. I'm really trying to say both. That one is his tefillah and tza'aka. He's able to encounter Kadosh Baruch Hu in a different way. And also there's the element of the person, that's Shara Demos. But when that person who's crying is because a victim of abuse, when they call it from Chamas, they're being abused, it has the additional element of the abuser deserves it in a particular way because the abuser is attacking HaKadosh Baruch Hu directly. And that also engenders the Ashkacha. I'm really trying to say to both aspects. The dima, the cries, the tears, allow the person to have a certain Shara Tefillah framework and mentality of approaching HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't exist normally in this world since the Beis Hamikdash is destroyed. And additionally, the abuser demands a more strict punishment because of his rejection of God as their champion.
Okay, thank you.
Sure. Can you tie this back to the original Gemaras?
Anyone in particular, or you mean, which ones do you mean? Just the original ones in, that we read? You mean one in particular? Just the, or Eliezer of Yeshua?
Yes.
You know, I was tough on Rabbi Gamliel a little bit earlier. I don't want to be so tough, like apply this Ramban to him. So I guess I don't want to do that, to say that he's denying a Kadosh Baruch Hu. You know, I don't want to say that. I would just say that that Inu Naz Dvarim, an element of this exists. That's why the Hashgacha exists. I guess, you know, logically, if I'm really saying that's the source of the Hashgacha, of the din and the rachamim for the person who's abused, then I have to say that Rabbi Gamliel, when he went a little bit too far, that element is there. You know, I don't really want to say that, but it would seem logically, if you can say that really was an asvara to some degree, then, you know, the one thing just to save myself a little bit is I say, Kadosh Baruch Hu is medaktik on tzaddikim k'chod asara. That even the smallest element of Nas Dvarim for Gamliel would be punished in a more severe way than for me and you, a regular person. If we say something to somebody or abuse them, you know, maybe Kadosh Baruch Hu is, if it's a small infraction, tiny, you know, maybe we just get punished a little bit. But for Gamliel, maybe it's more severe. You know, for a regular person, maybe you got to really abuse somebody else before God. You know, not just a joke, hopefully. But Rabbi Gamliel, maybe a small thing he was held liable for.
It would also seem that Rabbi Eliezer didn't, it wasn't like a case where he didn't have a support system, where he was a vulnerable person. I don't think you're saying that either, right?
No, I'm saying by Onaz Dvarim, it doesn't mean, Onaz Dvarim is a unique area where it takes a regular person who's normally a regular person, is not on the lower strata of society because he's not poor, not a convert, not a Yasam and Almana, and it converts him into that. And what Gamliel did is he had everybody gang up on Rabbi Eliezer. He had all the Chachamim and all the society to take all the Taharos, and they burnt it in front of him, and they put him in Nido and excommunicated him based Medrash. They cut him out of the Masorah. They never Paskin like him. He orchestrated an entire turning of the whole society and the Chachamim against Rabbi Eliezer. And Rabbi Eliezer had no one. I mean, that was the point of the Nido. That's what Nido does, ultimately, is to cut a person off from society. You know, and he Rabbi Eliezer, who normally wouldn't be under the class of the Arba Umlalim, became, because of the Onaz Dvarim. What Onaz Dvarim does is it takes a regular person and gives him, basically makes him into one of the Umlalim, one of the persons who's a victim with nobody to help him. That was the Chinuch's definition of Onaz. Onaz Dvarim is when you cause him pain and suffering. He's like helpless against it. That's like the particular, you know, I'm saying Onaz Dvarim, the type of Onaz Dvarim that this Gemara refers to, when he cries out and Hashem punishes Biyado, I don't think it means just if you say something, make a joke, maybe make somebody feel bad a little bit. I think it means real verbal abuse, psychological abuse, real victimizing, bullying somebody. That's what I think the Gemara means. I think just Stam Onaz Dvarim, it happens all the time, unfortunately. And I don't know if it necessarily triggers this response of the Hashgacha. It's a lav and it's an isser, but I think it triggers this response to Hashgacha when it's really that situation of where, like, an abusive boss, an abusive teacher, or, you know, or somebody's the kid in school is being bullied by other kids, and that person, you break the person psychologically and they cry out to Hashem to break down the personality. That's what I think the Gemara is referring to when you have all these things. And Rabbi Eliezer did break down. He cried and he was totally, you know, devastated. Life was ruined ultimately from that, you know, and it's, there's other stories that Gemara, you know, recounts later on, you know, what happened to Rabbi Eliezer. So really, it wasn't just a one-liner that got him and it bothered him or whatever. A person bounces back from that. It's the Onaz Dvarim that really breaks the person psychologically. That's what I think triggers the, converts the person into one of the Dalet Umalo and brings about this response of the Hashgacha, the unique response of the Hashgacha, of a Kadosh Baruch Hu punishes Biyado personally because you're attacking him. And it's Nene Miyad, it's immediately he's the person's answered. That's what I think. Yeah. It is particularly that case.
Rabbi Zimmer?
Yes.
One question of clarification. Are you saying that crying out in pain is a type of tefillah, or that tefillah is one thing and crying out in pain is a separate thing?
Rashi and Vestan, and he says there's 10 lashanos of tefillah. And tzaka is one of the lashanos of tefillah. So tzaka is done, as in there are different types of tefillah. And a person is, in Shmon Esses, omid lifnei Hashem, that's one type of tefillah. Tzaka, a person does not do when he's omid lifnei Hashem. He does that when he's nofal apanov, when he falls down, and the person is a broken person. That's tachnunim. It's a different type of a tefillah. So tefillah, in a sense, is the broader category, refers to all the different types. And then there's the tefillah of Shmon Esrei, and then there's the tefillah of Tzaka and Tachnunim that occurs after Shmon Esrei. It's mitzuruf to it. It should be done immediately afterwards. There's a relationship between those two, but they are two different types of tefillah, and they cannot be combined. You cannot do Tzaka in regular tefillah. You do Tzaka after regular tefillah. Aneinu, Hashem Aneinu, like we do. You know, those are, you know, although right, it's all, if you look through the whole lashon of Tachnunim, it's a person who's broken and crying out to Hashem. You don't do that in Shmon Esrei. And that's, even if in Shomei Tefillah, when you put in a bakasha, it's not v'lashon tza'aka. It's not tza'aka. It's not crying out to Hashem. It's a different type of a request. So they're all midas harachamim. It's all rachamim, and it's all tefillah. It's talking to, communicating with Hashem, talking to Hashem, but they're different methods of talking to Hashem. The gates of regular tefillah, Shmon Esrei, those, since the destruction of Beis HaMikdash, the ability to have kavanah and to have a pegiya, an encounter with a Kadosh Baruch Hu, through regular tefillah is no longer available. Whether it means entirely, at all, or whatever, or quantity, I don't know, but it's not, the gates closed. You're outside the gates, you know, you're outside the gates, davening to Hashem. But the gates of tza'aka, from a person, to save the victim from his oppressor, that hashkacha, it's a different hashkacha, and that's never changed. Different type of tefillah and different type of hashkacha.
So, Rabbi Zimmer.
Yes.
When his wife prevented him from doing tachnun.
Yes.
So, that was really a pogrom in his tefillah.
So I don't really know what you said, Leslie. You cut out. You want to try one more time? Is it pegamnis tefillah, or is it what?
Persuasion.
I can't hear you, Leslie. I'll answer your question based upon what I think it might have been. It's not a pegam in his Shmon Esrei. It's a pegam in the Tachnunim. The Tachnun must be mitzuruf to the Tefillah. For Tachnun to, it needs a prerequisite of first you daven, then you do Tachnunim, for it to be in the proper way. It's one of the Shmona Kiyum and Tefillah. And the Tziruf, when she broke the connection between Tachnun and Tefillah, she undermined the efficacy of the Tachnunim. Or maybe you're not allowed to be nofal panav. As I say, Rabbeinu Bachai, I think, derives from that. You can't have a hefsek. You're not allowed to be mishanin. It has to be connected to tefillah. I'm not really explaining that, but I'm just, you know, that's what this gemara seems to be indicating. The tachnun must be mitzuruf to tefillah, or else you can't really do it. And once she broke the tziruf between tachnun and tefillah, she was pogam in the tachnun. The tachnun was not effective. He didn't do tachnun. And only once he was able to be mitzaref the two and do tachnun and be tzoik, then the hashkacha of like Yitzhak Eli, Shema Tzakasa, that hashkacha became active and Gamliel was punished. Did that answer you? I hope I answered the question. I don't know, you know. Okay, so if no more questions, thank you all very much, and hope you enjoy the shiur.
Thank you.
Thank you, Rabbi.
Thank you.